6:09 p.m. Before we begin, we'd like to acknowledge that our university and our students' union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We are grateful to be on Cree, Tsleil-Waututh, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota SU territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papa's Chase Cree. These nations are family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge continuing colonial violence and respect Indigenous knowledges and traditions. All right, so normally at this meeting, we would take the oath, but if it's all right with council, just wait until the new members join us from the by-election, then we can all take it together as opposed to six people randomly standing up and taking the oath by themselves. That's sort of awkward. All right, move on to speaker's business announcements. The next meeting of Students' Council will take place on Tuesday, September 23rd, 2014. Just as a gentle reminder, that meeting is to take place at the Augustana campus. So don't show up to TELUS or ETLC or anywhere else. You can probably talk to the CAC chair about arrangements on how to get there. I'm sure we've arranged for some sort of transportation. Not, let me know and we'll figure something out. Vice President Hodgson is giving me a thumbs up, so I'm assuming that we have arranged for transportation. Also, just a reminder of the oath that you have taken. Don't forget that. Take attendance really quickly, then we'll move on to the rest of the agenda. President Lau.
Present.
Vice President Orzik.
Here.
Vice President Kinda.
Yep.
Vice President Hodgson.
Present.
Vice President Diaz.
Hello.
Governor Hansara. Councillor Allard.
Present.
Councillor Chen.
Present.
Councillor Bannister. Councillor Dueck.
Present.
Councillor Sleeman.
Present.
Councillor Zhang.
Here.
Councillor Jaddick.
Present.
Councillor Grulke. Councillor Bryce. Councillor Babatunde. Councillor Horvat.
Present.
Councillor Fidoski.
Present.
Councillor Jacobson. Councillor Wong.
Yeah.
Councillor Garg. Councillor Gore.
Here.
Councillor Khan. Councillor Krutzi. Councillor Morris.
Present.
Councillor Bhatia.
Here.
Councillor Hooper. Mr. Santoma for Councillor Champagne.
Present.
Councillor Binchik. Councillor Zinedine.
Here.
Councillor Kwan.
Present.
Councillor Huang.
Here.
Councillor Farouk.
Yep.
Councillor Hudson. And I'm here. Wonderful.
No,
she's not in the washroom. She went to go get her stuff from Ben Lee's, so she'll be.
Okay.
She's still here, though. I don't see her anywhere, Councillor Zhang, do you?
Sorry.
Starting the semester off really well, Councillor Zhang. All right, we'll move on. Yes, Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move to special order item 7E from the late additions into the council agenda.
Is there a seconder for this motion? I'll take Councillor Grulke. I'll take this. Anyways. Special ordering. I'm going to say that special ordering is not debatable, not amendable, and it requires a two-thirds majority. So all those in favor of special ordering item 7E to the main agenda, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Mr. Dueck, thank you. All right, so item 7E has been special ordered onto the main agenda. Yes, Councillor Grilke.
Can I motion for special order item 7E to the main agenda?
It'll automatically be special ordered,
okay.
So don't worry. Also, I will point you to item 7B from the late additions, which is an amendment to bill number 4. There is an additional amendment, I believe, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. All right, we'll move on to item 7D. Grulke Bannister moved to appoint one member of Students' Council to the Elections Review Committee. Councillor Grulke, would you care to introduce?
We need another member on the Elections Review Committee, dude.
What?
We need another member because someone resigned from IRC. And the meeting schedule has yet to be put in place, but mandating. Come to IRC. We need one member. Marina has stuff to say. We won't meet very often, but we'll meet on a somewhat regular basis.
It's not very often at all.
You're not the chair.
You're not the chair either.
We don't have a chair.
All right. Thank you. Councillor Bannister, would you like to add anything?
It's not a big time commitment.
Anything else?
No.
Any questions for Councillors Grulke or Councillor Bannister? Seeing none. Do I have a question? Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Question, okay.
What do you mean?
We don't have a meeting schedule in place yet,
but not very often.
Love it. And you had listened that. Initially, Councillor Shang.
Didn't say. Okay, never mind. Shut up.
Councillor Prue.
Seeing as you don't have a meeting schedule, you guys know we meet very often, would you be amenable to doing this after the elections? When you have six more members.
We need to get started. We are behind on some stuff, so we want to get the full committee together.
The other thing to note, Councillor Farouk, is that the by-elections have been postponed by a couple of weeks, so that pushes things back a little bit. So if they have lots of work to do, so be it. We'll move on to nominations. Are there any nominations? Councillor Bannister.
I nominate Councillor Farouk.
Councillor Farouk, do you accept?
No.
Councillor Bannister.
I nominate Councillor Zhang.
Councillor Zhang, do you accept?
No.
Councillor Bannister.
I nominate Vice President Diaz.
Vice President Diaz, do you accept?
No.
I saw a placard go up over here.
Yeah.
Yes, Councillor Bannister.
I nominate Councillor Jacobson.
Councillor Jacobson, do you accept?
I accept.
Are there any further nominations? Seeing none? Congratulations, Councillor Jacobson. Wonderful. Right, so because there are no presentations, we'll move directly into executive committee reports. Do any members of the executive committee wish to make a report? President Lau.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Three items to deliver today in my oral report. First off, we have a position open within the Students' Union that's really, really exciting. It's the position of being an exec coordinator. So it's a supportive role that you would give directly to the five executives. And over the next year or two, we would hope to grow this role into a management role as well, so that we would manage the two administrative assistants in the Students' Union. If you know anybody that's a graduate that has had experience with the Students' Union or is interested in such work, please do refer them to myself or any of the other executives. The job posting is up on JobKit. I've also posted it up on Facebook, and something to keep an eye out for. Secondly, I would like to invite you all to meet your predecessors at an event on September 20th. So that's Saturday. I think we've sent it out through several communications already, but I hope this is a day you plug in your calendars. Registration starts at 9:30. We'll be meeting at Substage, and this is a day where the presidents and the past chairs of the building committee of Sub will be gathering to talk about the building renovations, the past and the present and the future of our sub renovations. So it's super interesting, and they really want to meet a lot of the current student representatives, so I really encourage you to come out to that. Last but not least, I'm going to give you a quick reminder that you're no longer normal students in this new school year. A quick reminder that you're all now student representatives, and I hope you carry out this leadership role into your day-to-day activities as a student representative and as a student of the UA. So I recognize that you are an ambassador of the union in your day-to-day activities. Not asking you to, be at your best behavior all the time, but reach out to those in need in your class, encourage others to take part in extracurricular activities, and encourage others to attend council meetings as well. I think you guys know what to do, and it's a quick reminder to be what you want to be.
Thank you, President Lau. Any other members of the executive committee wish to make a report? Councillor, Vice President Kinda, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I have a pretty thorough report here. I'll just kind of go through it and then emphasize a few points. So the last month, as you're hopefully aware, we've been dealing with market volatility. And in my report, I detail kind of the current situation that we're in. So the most physical faculty that we've been talking about is the Faculty of Law. However, there are other programs that might be hit as well. So please read through that section if you want a better understanding. And there's also a blog post I wrote that you can find on the SU website, which gives you a really good, in my opinion, layout of what market modifiers are and how they can affect us. A few other things. A bunch of stuff is happening in provincial politics. As you know, we have a new premier. And there's also the MVP leadership race going on right now. So we're doing our best to engage with those candidates in terms of post-secondary lobbying. There's not much to report for cause right now on market modifiers. So a kind of a win for us was after we spent a week doing media stuff, all the opposition parties picked up on closed secondary issues, and most of them spoke out against market modifiers, and all of them discussed closed secondary. So that was really cool to see. I spent a bunch of time, you know, in the community, doing stuff in the Senate, with other student associations, and with Week of Welcomes. That was really, really fun. That's about it. So a few things that I want to emphasize. Make sure you know market modifiers. I'm sure you're going to get questions from your students or your constituents. This Thursday evening, we're hosting an event with the campus NDP. So we're going to have some MPs coming out to the alumni room and stuff. It's at 5:30, so come out if you want to mingle. I'm sure there's, like, food and snacks. It'll be fun. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that I'm also doing office hours. And so I mentioned the times in my report, but if you ever want to come talk to me about anything, my door is open, especially at those specified times, so feel free to stop by. And the next thing is, the execs will be going out and doing class talks next week, and I hope you do that as well. So talk to us. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice President Kinda. I have Vice President Diaz next.
Most of my report is captured in the written documents and not on the editions, but I'd like to get the message out that there are 3 executive positions available on the Residence Halls Association out of 6. So they're pretty hurting for executive members. And if you know anybody who lives in residence that would be interested in helping out the Residence Halls Association, then probably get in touch with me. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice President Diaz. Vice President Hodgson, do you wish to make a report?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So a couple of updates from my and Post Social Street is now open. You guys haven't been using that, so you can come through to the south and north part of campus through there and check out the beginnings of what college is going to look like. It's there's still not a lot in there because it's pretty far from being completed, no furniture or anything, just some temporary stuff. But it is kind of interesting to go check it out. Also had a tour with the gateway on the Paul building, just seeing what it looked like in there. So right now the fitness is scheduled to be completed at the end of November, early December, and the climbing center will be late December, early January, probably before it's open. So it's scheduled there. As well, in the Students Union building, the undergrind is open now in the lower level. So go check that out. It's got donuts. If you get there early in the morning, they're actually still hot. Like, they're fresh donuts. We make them in-house. Homemade donuts. They're delicious. The honey grillers are fantastic. So leading into my next point, I have office hours, as I think most of the exec do, on this week on Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. So come drop by and you bring me a honey cooler, favorite. But yeah, if you have anything you want to talk to me about, I'm free to have a discussion about whatever. I'll just be in my office working away and we have time for you guys. So come by and chat, please.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hodgson. Vice President Ortzig, did you want to make a report?
Not this
time. Okay. Perfect. All right. That closes executive committee reports. Move on to board and committee reports. Do any chairs, Governor Hanser isn't here, do any chairs wish to make a report? Councilor Farouk?
The audit committee just received financial reviews of the ICE and physical education. We'll be looking over those in the next few weeks. Just want to let you guys know.
Thank you very much. Any other chairs? Councilor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So there was a ruling from the DAI board regarding standing committee's ability to remove their own members. The ruling is attached to the main agenda, so you guys want to have a read over that. So basically, just to sum up the decision, the committees that have made standing order allowing themselves to remove the committee members are at breaking bylaw as of right now. Specifically bylaw 100, it specifically states that council will decide the composition of the committees and not committees themselves. So we will be having a discussion at bylaw at the next bylaw meeting regarding this issue. We will be looking to either clarify that implied power that the committees don't have, or we will look to see if we want to make any changes to allow committees to decide their own membership in terms of removal. However, I'm extending an invitation to any committee members or chair or any counselor actually to come to the next bylaw meeting if they want to say something about or if they want to have their opinion regarding the composition of the standing committees. Bylaw doesn't have a meeting schedule right now. We are in the process of deciding that for our fall semester. But once that schedule is decided, I will send out the time so everybody's aware. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councilor Zhang, any other chairs wish to make a report? Seeing none, we'll move into question period. Start our first 15 minutes. Councilor Bannister.
I have a question for Vice President Diaz. Why do all these like residence hall association people keep on dropping off? And do you think that's reflective of the structure of the organization?
So only two people have left, and both have left for confidential personal reasons. The first was an election by the presidency. She nominated the community, which actually removes a spot for him too, and he's stepping down as well. We are looking at the structure of the RHA, but these two cases aren't reflective of the structure, they're reflective of personal things that came up.
Thank you for the question. Councillor Allard.
Question for Professor Miles. What sanctions are going to be imposed on the Law Students Association for the breach of students union bylaws?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. And thank you, Councillor Lutter. The investigation of the LSA has actually yet to start. We also have Rebecca from Discover Governance here today to answer any questions specific to that, so I'll defer my signature to Rebecca.
Usually when something like this happens with a faculty association, we're less concerned about, I guess, what they did and more concerned about what effect it's going to have. So that's kind of why we don't necessarily have, you know, sanctions that we're kind of moving forward with. We need to investigate the situation. Find out why they broke bylaw, what effect that's going to have on law students, on the LSA, on the students' union, and figure out whether or not the LSA is able to continue to represent their students really well. And from there, kind of just make a decision as to whether or not they should be put on probation and have greater oversight into everything they're doing, or whether they were justified in their actions and should be dropped. So the final decision as to whether or not they're put on probation or anything like that rests with the Vice President.
So just going beyond that question, seeing the effects of the LSA supporting a tuition increase, from my understanding, other faculties are also thinking about increasing tuition as well using marketing modifiers. Would you think that council would need to have need a response to that situation because of that effect that the LSA has had? Because that work and the fact that they have had.
I don't know if I could answer that right now. I haven't really, like, begun the investigation formally yet, so I don't know all of the information.
Just a question to the speaker.
Yes.
Would that question then be directed more towards President Mao?
I was allowing it because it seemed like you were directing your question towards Rebecca Taylor.
Okay.
You could direct it towards whoever. I'm just allowing her to speak because she's here as a resource, and hopefully she doesn't mind. Just because she's here and it's a topic that's relevant to her position with the students. All right. Councillor Khan.
Question to Rebecca. So, assuming that the LSA is, I guess, after the investigation, seen as not representing the group, just to make sure I'm clear, you're expecting them to change this happen, or like, what would be the end result of that?
No, there's really specific situations under which we can de-recognize a faculty association. One of them is them choosing to disband. One of them is them being in gross violation of their fiduciary duty, which in this case basically means they're fraudulent or corrupt. Like, it's a really, really serious thing. Or a majority of their students petition for them to be de-recognized. So the step, if they're found to have been, I guess, not representing their students, is to put them on probation and help them become stronger as an organization. And then if they fail to do that, then de-recognition can be prompted. But that's...
Yeah.
questions for VP 8 or Rebecca Taylor. I'm wondering if there's a soft timeline for the investigation in terms of when it's going to start and when it's going to finish.
I'd like to defer that question to Rebecca. The investigation will begin, I guess, formally tomorrow when I contact all of the involved parties to start speaking with them, and then the end timeline is really dependent upon when I am able to meet with them and any like follow-up work I have to do after that. Typically, the process for an investigation takes 1 to 3 months, but I'm hoping that it will be less than a month. I'm going to try to work with them.
Thank you.
I saw a placard up in this general region. I saw yours. Anyone else? Okay.
This room sucks.
Governor Hansra.
My question?
Yes.
I should hear this question for Vice President Academic, Mr. Governance. I fail to see any guidelines about what an investigation is, what the purpose of an investigation is, the scope. And essentially the parameters and boundaries of an investigation. Is there somewhere you can direct me towards that?
Most of what we try to follow comes partly from bylaw 8100, and then also partly from an internal probation that we've used in the past based on precedent, like whenever we've had a faculty association, how we've gone about it and what has worked. So we have kind of a manual that is based on the past experience, and that's what everything is being based on.
Councilor Khan. Governor Hansra.
This question again is for the Vice President Academic versus Governor Grimes. Would you be willing to share that internal manual to council so that council is aware of, council and students are aware of what the process is?
I think we can share it with council because it's considered to be internal to the students' union, I would say, so it's something that council certainly can have access to, and faculty associations can as well, so I'll be sharing that with the Law Students Association if they'd like to see it.
Mr. Jang.
This question is for BPA or Rebecca Taylor again. The results and the findings of the investigation, will that be shared with council as well, or just your decision, or just her decision?
That's a good question. Thank you. I believe that I will make a decision and then share my justification for the decision without sharing the whole report, but maybe citing examples from it, because I don't really want to get into he said, she said, or anything like that. And the report is not structured to be like that. It's not structured to have direct quotes from people or anything like that. But I'm not super comfortable with sharing the report, but I am comfortable with sharing my justifications.
Governor Hansra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's a good question, actually. I think I know what you're trying to say, but the way you said it's, it's stating that, as a student, not only as a member of council, it's kind of worrisome that, I understand that VLSI took a position, but well, in the case of optics, you're essentially, the reason that we're in this position is because of they spoke out and they expressed their opinion. And now to have a closed report where council, at least even council, is not aware of it, do you consider that bad optics?
Part of the reason why a lot of it stays confidential is because, when I'm interviewing people and talking to them and investigating, I'm going to be dealing with a lot of really confidential information, and I want the people that I'm talking to know that the specific things they say are going to be shared so that they can be more candid and I can get the information I need to make a good report and a good judgment.
Councillor Zhang.
This question is for VPA and Rebecca Taylor. Would either of you be more comfortable in sharing the actual report and the information related in a closed camera session with the council?
Or,
yeah.
discussion? Is there a way that I can have more time to think about this, or give some more thought to it?
Yeah, sure. You can always get back to Councillor Zhang. You know, I mean, to provide the best answer possible, sometimes you can take extra few minutes or extra few days or whatever, how much over time you need.
Would you mind submitting a written question and then I can write a paper?
For sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I defer to Councillor or Vice President Chinda?
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to stress that, like, not sharing the report, if that's what the EPA decides, doesn't mean we're hiding anything, but it's, again, like Rebecca said, to ensure that everyone who's being interviewed can say whatever they want to say without fear of being like, oh, this is going to go out to everybody in the student body, they're going to know exactly what I said. And that could, you know, misconstrue the process that Catherine and Discover Governance is going through. And I also wanted to remind Council that this entire process is delegated to the BPA and to Discover Governance, more importantly. So as council, we don't have to micromanage everything that DG does, as long as we have say over the outcomes and make sure the process is good and thorough. And I think that should be clear for council. Thanks.
Governor Ezra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to also probably give the gateway a quote that they probably won't. This process is, based on what I'm hearing from right now, this investigation is clearly, very quickly, disintegrating into a joke. And the reason being is, you know, when we're making decisions, public decisions, we have student bodies that represents all students, represents faculty associations, you know, things should be public. I'm concerned about that the fact that things are being said in confidential, that actually increases the exploitation of hearsay, of rumor, of gossip, of the exaggeration of certain statements. And I don't know if the academic or the student union executive
is there a question
about that? Yeah. So the question is: do you not think that the process of keeping things confidential is not transparent, and also the risk of increasing, you know, and relying on rumor, gossip, hearsay, and exaggeration of certain things?
Is that question directed to?
One could take it. Let's give it to Vice President Externals.
Certainly. So, no, I don't think this makes the process any less transparent or accountable. At the end of the day, the BPA is to be held accountable for any decision she makes, and Council has the power to question her, question the process, and we can clearly and definitely do that. Once the decision is made, as the BPA stated, she will justify her decision to the rest of Council, and it's up to Council to decide if they're comfortable with their justifications or not. But for right now, the process has been delegated to an external body for a reason, right? And so we should let that happen. As we have outlined in our bylaws and our internal procedures, and then we can go from there. So I will just leave it at that.
Councillor Chadwick.
This is a question for Discover Governance. I was just wondering what the sort of desired outcome from the investigation is, and sort of what way you look forward if they're found accountable or whatever your process is.
Can you just repeat the question?
So, just what is the desired result of the investigation?
For me, the desired result is really just that I've gotten all of the information from everyone that I can. I'm talking to the LSA, I'm going to talk to the dean. I'll be speaking with everybody in the SU who's been advising the LSA up until now. The student submitted a petition regarding LSA's actions, so I'll be speaking to them as well. And I really just want to get a very real and accurate picture of why the LSA acted the way they did and what that effect has been, so that we can move forward and make the organization more accountable and stronger, so that we can make sure that if any damage has been done, we can mitigate it and prevent further damage from being done.
Councillor Farouk.
Seeing as there seems to be an issue with sharing information from the would-be report, just towards the BPA or Discovery Governance, whoever chooses to answer the question. Seeing as BPA did say that she'd be sharing quotes from the investigation, right?
I said I wouldn't share direct quotes, direct but quotes, I would okay. share like a general justification. Yeah.
Okay. So okay. Some like would it be amenable as a go between to maybe we share just like parts of the investigation that were that could be taken without releasing other confidential information about people interviewed.
Far be it for me to predict the future of what will be in the report, but I think that that's fair.
Right. Thank you for answering the question.
All right, and with the last question for this first 15 minutes, Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question would be to BBX. Following up what she just mentioned regarding council being able to question the process for the investigation, I am wondering if she believes that one of the parts of being able to question a process is knowing what the process is under the context that council ultimately, while being a volunteer body, ultimately is the body that's representing students and also is the ultimate governing body of the SU. That being said, I am wondering if the BPX believes that in order for a representative body who has limited time due to their other extracurricular activities, for them to be able to question a process to an extent which would be deemed responsible and accountable for them to know that process first.
I don't understand the question. I can actually answer that question.
Sure.
If it's okay with you. The process is actually outlined in bylaw 8100. So if you look to, I believe it's section 20. I'm sorry. That I'm supposed to be doing an investigation is outlined in bylaw 8100, and council can edit, change bylaws.
Sorry, can I just reframe the question a little bit? What I mean by process really is the result of the process. Does that make sense? So taking that you will take steps to ask questions, contact different parties to have the end decision, would it be pertinent for council to be aware of the results of the questions and the little process in the middle for us to be able to question it?
You mean the recommendation?
The report is what I mean. Again, the report. Does that make sense?
No. I think I understand what you're saying, Councillor Zhang, but I think Vice President and Rebecca Taylor and Vice President Kim have addressed that. I think what he's trying to say is, essentially, at the very core, is basically, would it not be in council's best interest to share the report with council? Is that what you're... That's what I understood from the question.
I will submit a written question.
All right. So, that expires our first 15 minutes of question period, sorry. Unless I see five placards up, we will move on. All right, so we'll continue with Governor Hansra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll get back to Vice President Kinda's comment, but I said another question for some governments, Vice President Kinda. Have you guys looked at seeking a legal opinion for Section 2B, freedom of expression memo, and seeing, is if that bylaw 8100 is a violation of that?
I'd like to defer that to my chairperson.
So looking at seeking a legal opinion tomorrow.
Councillor Lard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a question for BPA pardon me, Councillor Zhang, if I'm stepping on your toes here. But what I'm wondering is, do you believe that the information that we share in the report will be sufficient for council to properly determine whether this is a process that properly takes into account the transgressions of the Law Students Association, given the fact that their actions could start a very pose very dangerous precedents for other student representative organizations to act against SU bylaw without much consequence.
Councilor Zhang has a point of parliamentary inquiry.
Would council be able to motion to see the report?
I don't know. That's a good question. I can get back to you on that. I don't know if that's ever been done before.
Vice President, yes.
May I speak to it? So, if you're asking people things and you frame the conversation as confidential, then you share it with council in camera, it's no longer confidential. It's the equivalent of having an in-camera meeting and then sharing the results of that in-camera meeting with another group in camera. It's like, I'm going to share this confidential information in confidence with another
group. Can we have a parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker?
Yeah.
Is student council, and I think there's a legal memo on this from what I've heard from hearsay, from previous executives. Isn't student council the response, aren't the executives essentially responsible to student council? Isn't student council somewhat analogous to a board of directors of the students' union?
As far as my understanding is of students' council and their relationship to the executive, yes. And to speak to what Vice President Diaz just said, because everyone on students' council is bound by confidentiality agreements, and like I said, I'll look into it further, but there's a lot of room on both sides whether or not the report can be shared. But I'll dig into it a little bit further. So, going back to Councilor Alar's question, do you want to just kind of state the Cole's notes again, just because I think the question might have been lost a little bit?
Given that this is a situation that could potentially seriously undermine the authority of council in the eyes of all student representative associations, do you believe that the results that will be shared with council will be sufficient for us to make an educated decision regarding the process and the validity of the process?
I'm still not sure if I'm picking up what you're laying down. So it's quite obvious that bylaw was broken. And are you asking me if the decision that I'm going to make will, because before I make any sort of determination at all about what's going to happen going forward or anything like that, I want to see the results of the report. So I can't really say like what effect my decision will have because I have not made it. Yes, please.
What I mean more so is that when you have the results of the report and present that to Students Council, are you confident that you will have the information required to make an educated decision based on, an educated decision on the validity of the report based on the information that you provide without breaching the confidentiality?
What decision are you making?
Our decision based, on whether we, whether Students' Council see this, where I'm not entirely sure what our authority is in the process. But
I think what he's trying to say is basically, are we going to know how you came to this decision?
Absolutely.
Is that essentially the crux of your question, Councilor Lord?
Well, how you came to these decisions and
making sure that the process was adequately followed.
That the process was.
I think what he means is that
I just want to make sure that the question is proper, very clear, so that
point of information is the counselor suggesting.
No, that's not a point of information. I would suggest to Councilor Lauren basically do the same thing as Councilor Jane. Just submit a written question and. I think you'll be able to get a much better response. Okay. Councilor Sleeman.
This question is to both our law students in the room. So, Councilor Khan and Governor Hanstra.
So, I'll direct the question to Councilor Khan, and you can defer to Councilor Hanstra.
And since Rebecca said that she will investigate people closely related and that may have advised the LSA, would they be willing to be interviewed or advised in the investigation process? For the question to Governor Hanser.
Governor Hanser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unless I'm compelled to, I'm not very keen on the process right now. This might change after I think about it, but no, I'm not a fan of having statements said behind closed doors, especially when it seems like lawyers are getting involved on both sides. We don't know the LSA is seeking advice, is seeking legal counsel. I'm sure that the SU has lawyers, so it's a sticky situation. Vice President Kinna continuously talks about justification, that you will get your justification. What the justification based on is based on closed-door, non-transparent information. So the foundation of this whole investigation is at risk to be disputed. That's my concern. I don't want, because of that, I'm very hesitant to partake in such a matter. If the council wants to know what my involvement is, I have no problem telling you guys right now. What I did is Scott Meyer and I met with the dean. I encouraged him to come to council. That is why he came to council. I organized the meeting. I helped organize the meeting. I encouraged the dean to meet with the SU executives. Vice President Lau and President Lau and Vice President Borzik was there as well. I encouraged the council, and this is what I ran on when I ran the board of those. I ran on mutually beneficial outcomes, mutual gains, an interest-based negotiation, not based on positional most negotiation. Based on that, I saw what happened with international students. I saw what happened previously, right? You know, when the power, we are the weaker bargaining power, the powers can, the stronger party can ram things through. So did I encourage the LSA to seek a deal? Did I encourage the LSA president to negotiate a deal to see what's up instead of just saying no? And in fact, I'm negotiating in good faith, yes. Did I encourage the LSA to write that letter? No, I did not tell him to write that letter. I actually probably gave them alternatives of how we can actually get through. There's loopholes in bylaw 8100, which you can get through. I discussed that with the LSA president, and he did not want to take part of that. He felt that he had the mandate of the student body to seek this. Based on my understanding, the LSA president may have other arguments. I can't speak for him. So that's based on my, and did I consider writing a letter of support as well? I did consider writing a letter, but the same reason that I encouraged the LSA to ultimately not write a letter was the same reason I didn't, and at the end of the day, and that was for multiple reasons, including I was concerned about my position and any ramifications. Also, the consultation process was a little iffy. I thought there was a little bit more personally, that there was a little bit more. It wasn't as unanimous as meant, based on my understanding of the law faculty as the LSA president thought. So and I reached out to multiple students, and that's how. So that's what I know, and that's what I did. But it's likely that I will not partake in a closed door investigation based on this.
Yes,
Ms. Prismash. This is weirdly related to the question that was asked. Like, it was, are you comfortable in assisting in this process?
I'm only allowing this because Governor Hanser is basically outlining the reasons for which he would be comfortable or would not be comfortable partaking in this particular discussion, I guess. Moving forward, certainly I'm looking into making changes to standing orders to limit the length of questions and answers that are given, and then we can move forward from there if that's sufficient. I'm going to keep going here. I have Councillor Fidosky next.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is to President Lau. You say in your report that faculty law isn't the only faculty submitting a proposal for market modifiers. What other faculty have done?
All right. We've already received confirmation that the MBA degree, so for business graduate students, and the law proposals were submitted prior to September 1st. Those proposals have not been returned to the university. There are also at least two other proposals that are being discussed actively. One is with UConn students,
in the Faculty of Arts, and the second one being pharmacy, and their proposal has yet to be. So besides law and MBA, none of the other proposals were submitted to the government. The two that have been submitted are now returned to the university, and we have until October 15th. Thank you.
Next person I have on my list is Governor Hansara.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for the Vice President External. Based on the fact that, you know, I'm going to change this question to the Vice President Academic. But now that it's based on my understanding, the Law Student Association has sought legal counsel, how does that change your process, if at all?
Thank you for the question. I've actually asked the Law Students Association how they would like to work it into the process. They haven't answered me yet. How I kind of think it's going to go is there'll just be an extra person in the room, is an extra chair in the room for the representation. But I kind of want to see what they say. I kind of want to see what they'd like to do with that.
Right. Councillor Zhang isn't here. Councillor Jaddick.
This is for just government government. Please correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that council has trusted Discover Governance to make a ruling and a decision using due process to figure out what the problem is or the issue that it was with the LSA, correct?
No, I'm conducting an investigation and I'm making recommendations, but as per file 800, the Vice President should have a final say on what is actually done with the LSA.
But I guess just so the process has been entrusted to you rather than to student council.
Are you asking why?
No, I'm just asking if that's what's happening. Because there seems to be a
student council under SB bylaw doesn't actually have any official jurisdiction in the area of the status of faculty association.
Perfect, thank you. That's
what if I'm under increase?
Yes, Governor Hansara.
This is about student union structure. Since the FAs, the student union, the power of the FAs comes from the student union. And since the student's council is essentially the board of directors of the student union, does that not mean that the student union...
I don't know how it's written into bylaw, Governor Hansara, so I can't give you a good answer. I'll dig into it just like with the other question and then we can go from there. Alright, the next person on my list, Councillor Jaddick. No, just ask a question. Councillor Farouk.
Alright, hold on, I wrote it down. Questions towards President Lau. Just how would the FDA be responding to the effect that the LSA's support of tuition increase has had since other faculties are now considering market modifiers? I've heard that staff faculties as well. It would be so what are we about?
Speaker? Yes.
The councilor has an actual permission to read from papers.
Are you reading from papers or are you just
hearsay?
That's your opinion. Are you reading from your phone?
Oh, of course. This is a question we're down. I asked this question like 20 minutes ago. I meant asking again. It's the exact same question. All right. Yeah, so can I continue, please? Okay, thank you. I'll start from the beginning. That's something I forgot.
This will be the last question for this particular.
All right, yeah. So just how would the SU be responding to the effect that the LSA's support of tuition increase has had since other faculties are considering market modifiers? It would be, like, what I'm wondering about is the overarching issue rather than specifically on how to deal with the LSA. Would we be making a general statement on the issue?
That's too many questions, Councillor Farouk. Oh, got to pick one.
Okay.
Sounds like six questions. Pick one question.
This is a very long question.
It sounded like you're asking like four or five questions in a row. So I'll allow President Lau to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll answer what I wrote. So I think it's really important for council to understand that yes, there's an investigation going on because LSA has broken SU bylaw. But what's just as important is how there's we still have to continue to make the push on market modifiers because that's still an issue.
now that we know that the Fastlight government or the ministry has returned the proposals back to the university, we have until October 15th to make the push on market modifiers. Whether that's to go back to the student body and actually run it to the site, or whether that's to continue pushing the ministry to not accept market modifiers at all, since we do have new leadership candidates in the PC party now. So I know Vice President External, Vice President Kinda wants to speak on it for my speaking here.
Sure. So just to clarify your question, you're asking how does this impact other students and other faculties?
That and how we were responding to the fact that...
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah.
So, as you see on the main agenda, Catherine and myself are proposing a motion dealing with, regarding how we will deal with this specific instance if it happens again in the future. So, we can discuss that when the motion comes through. But pretty much echoing the President's statements, in terms of market modifiers, to be honest, everything regarding this in the provincial government is really chaotic right now. And, you know, depending on what happens with the new Minister for Advanced Education, this might not even happen in the first place, right? But currently what we're seeing with market modifiers is that each institution is allowed to submit a number of proposals, and our institution is having a couple different programs doing that. And so if that's the case, which it is, a big concern for the Students' Union is to make sure that there's good process and the students are being consulted, right? And we'll be discussing that later in the meeting when the motion is coming up. So again, for us right now, there's a couple different sides to it. One is that if this happens, we want to make sure students are involved and have a say, and that hopefully means a plebiscite for students in that faculty. And on the other hand, in terms of lobbying, we're trying to ensure that, you know, hopefully market modifiers don't actually end up happening for us. So I hope that clarifies things for you right now. Okay.
All right, so with that, like I said, the second 15 minutes of question period has expired. Does anyone want to make a motion to extend question period by another 15 minutes?
What about the parliamentary inquiry?
Yes.
Separately. How many people are there?
There are 6 people on the speaker's list currently. So, Councillor Jane, seconded by Governor Hantra. So all those in favor, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted? All right, we'll move on with President Lau.
I actually want to make a motion to move into informal consideration to allow the executives to speak and provide much more clarity on the topic of market modifiers, and hopefully answer a lot of questions along the way.
Because question period is pretty informal to begin with, I think we're kind of already doing that anyways, so we'll just keep with deferring speaking turns and that kind of thing, because it seems to be working fairly well unless council wants to make this more informal.
And if I can have a response to that?
Sure.
I think we never put forward a presentation, but to have a presentation-styled delivery of information to council to give a little bit more context would allow the questions to be a lot more succinct.
So what you're saying is you want to basically make a presentation or speak
through informal consideration.
I would recommend just asking one of the executives a question, then you guys can all just continue deferring. Could take a long time, but that's what I would recommend. With that, I'll move on to Councillor Duick.
I'll actually pass it if the question is answered.
Okay, Councillor Khan.
My question is just generally to council or can answer it. Has there been in the past any association that's broken the bylaw in a similar manner that the LSA has?
I'll direct the question to President Lau, just because the cat chair is in the air now that it directed it towards her. So the question was whether or not any association in the past has similarly violated bylaw. Essentially, I think was the question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So from my knowledge and experience here at the Students' Union, I have not heard of any controversial bylaw or with this specific issue of the bylaw.
What for me?
And I wouldn't mind just deferring to
Mr. Speaker. I'm gonna age myself again here.
a little bit. So this bylaw came into effect, based on my understanding, it was on council assigned, the young, fresh science council back in 2010, I think it was. And the reason this bylaw came is because in 2010, the LSA did something similar to this now. They supported a market modifier. At that time, the market modifier didn't go through. Because of that, at that time, council decided after that instance that we need to rein, essentially, make sure that our faculty associations aren't going against policy and to limit the ability of government or the administration to contradict SU policy by having faculty associates speak up and essentially create rivalry. So that's why the bylaw was created. This is actually is the first, based on my understanding, the first test of that bylaw, and it's convenient that it's the last student association again.
Thank you very much. Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question will be to either Vice President Diaz or the VPA for Discover Governance. Referring to his answer regarding the fact that if the investigation was done in confidentiality and then brought over again to council, whether it be in camera or not, because it's in another group, you're basically breaking the confidentiality. I am wondering whether that means that the information and the report itself and the process, the items that are not being shared with council, does that mean that DG and BPA will not be sharing that information with any of the other executives as well as the entire SU body?
I'm going to direct that question to Vice President Diaz.
I can't answer whether or not, because it's about the VP academic sharing information with the executive. I'd like to defer to the VP academic.
Again, I'm going to take a little more time to think on this one.
Okay. Governor Hanserup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to go back to my friend, Vice President Kinda, right now, with this question. Previously, it was stated that you believe the justification is transparent enough for council to understand the Vice President Academic's decision. However, based on the fact that the information is based on a closed-door setting, do you not, and where there's no transparency, no council doesn't know what's being said, do you think that's really in the best interests of students and transparency?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So let me preface this with an analogy. When council is hiring a staff member, let's talk about the speaker, for example. We go on camera. Why do we go on camera? We go on camera so that we can discuss confidential and personal things specific to, an individual's background, such as their employment history, their educational status, all that kind of stuff. We have a thorough debate, we talk about things, but it remains in camera because, we don't want the general public knowing a lot of information, personal information about an individual. Now, would you characterize that as unaccountable or untransparent? I don't think so. I think that this process is very similar. It is actually quite accountable because you're holding the VPA to account, right? You're holding the VPA to account for her decisions, and it's up to her to justify them in whatever manner she wants to do that. That doesn't mean that process isn't accountable or it's not transparent. That's just kind of, that process is in place to protect all the individuals involved in that process. So I do think that it's a good process. I think it's fair. And I think that by ensuring that the people who are being interviewed, if I was being interviewed, I want to know that my comments are not necessarily going to be made public right away. Maybe after the investigation is over and after the decision has been made, but again, that's not up to me. But this is all about ensuring fairness, right? And it is accountable to students, I think, and I think it is transparent.
Councillor Perut. Mr. Santoma, did you have a question?
My question was for President Lau. Wondering if he could properly explain the market modifiers for the council.
That's a great question.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Mr. Troxley. Sorry, I haven't caught your name yet. But actually, I would love to start
by deferring my speaking turn to Vice President Kim, thinking of the background broadly on market modifiers. And when she feels appropriate, she can defer back to me to give an update on current context and next steps moving forward.
Sure. So generally, market modifiers, there are an extra amount of fees or tuition applied to a certain program in order to meet market needs. So what this means is that, like, if an let me give you background. So back in the day, a few years ago, we were able to get a cap on tuition. That means tuition increases were tied to CPI, so they could only increase by CPI every year. And when that cap was put in place, some institutions thought that it was unfair because their current tuition levels were at a step with the market. And so the minister at that time said, okay, no worries, we can introduce something called market modifiers. So if you feel that your program fees are out of step with the market, you can apply to modify your tuition levels. And that's when the first round of market modifiers were brought into place. Back then, Minister Horner said that it would be a one-time thing, that this is only happening one time just to alleviate any potential problems with the tuition cap. And since then, the market modifier piece was put into the provincial regulation, and it's remained on the books ever since. And so clearly, it isn't a one-time thing. And we're seeing it again this year, where the current Minister of Advanced Education has again opened up the window to allow submission for new proposals for market modifiers. So that's the general context there. And it's pretty much like a differential tuition increase. So apply differentially to the program. And I can confirm that to you.
Thank you, Vice President Kinda. I think what we all need to recognize in the room is how unique the situation has been. We need to recognize how the government has put pressure on the provost and the dean of the law to force the LSA to write this letter of support under with a really, really strict time constraint. It's always been clear that a market modifier won't be looked at by the government unless it has a letter of support. I think everyone in the room also recognizes that the support from the Faculty of Law generally for a market modifier has been a constant issue for the past couple of years. And we also knew how important it was for us as counsel for a proper process to take place and proper consultation, as we would say, to take place before counsel approves and allows Faculty Association to move forward with a letter of support. So, 3 weeks ago when the Law Students Association came forward to council to make a presentation on the market modifier, and it was the first time that we all saw this proposal, it was their choice not to bring it to us and make a motion to ask for approval. At that moment, it was already expected that they would not seek council's approval prior to submitting their letter. And it was really clear from both Vice President Orczyk, myself, and the rest of the Vice President team, that there would have to be an investigation launched if the Law Students Association was the right letter of support. So let's fast forward that a little bit, move into the first week of class. We knew that the investigation would have to take place, and internally there was definitely struggles about, well, what do we want to do with an association that has taken a step intentionally to break the law? Does council, or would we, as a student union, want to set a precedent where a student representative association could break bylaw and we could simply let them go. This is when we noticed a flaw in our bylaws and how we didn't have a clear process under bylaw 8100 to outline what the process was to gain council's approval. It was really tough because if we didn't offer an emergency meeting for the Law Students Association prior to September 1st and submitting their letter of approval, then they wouldn't have a chance to seek council's approval. So there was debate and discussion at the time about whether or not we should even hold an emergency council meeting just to formally say no, so that we can say that at least the Law Students Association had a chance to seek approval. So I think where we are today is we now have a motion on our council papers, and my vice president team has brought to CAP earlier today a few options of what a process might look like for council approval. To outline clear expectations for faculty associations that might want to move forward with market modifiers. Also today, we received a phone call with the provost and received updates that the proposals that were accepted, the law and the MBA proposal, have now been returned back to the university. We recognize that there is this tension that's building up between the Law Students Association and the Students Union because, of course, they don't want to be put on probation and they don't want to be punished for something that they don't
feel like they don't feel like they did wrong. And that's how we're currently moving forward in a process where, yes, there's going to be an investigation, and just like any other investigation, it is in our best interest and in the student's best interest to keep confidential. But it's interesting because we know how much counsel cares about this case, and we're also aware how much you already know. And if you already know so much, we, from my perspective, I don't understand why there's that tension about openness, and I hope that there's no sentiment that the execs are hiding anything, because from our end, it seems like due process to ensure that whatever happens in an investigation stays in an investigation. So moving forward from here, next steps, the Students' Union will be reaching out to deans that have submitted proposals for market modifiers, and we hope to explain to them what our expectations are from their students' associations. One example of this is how we've received email correspondence from the Alberta Pharmacy Students Association. And they were also apparently given a strict timeline of September 1st, and they've also submitted a letter of support without even knowing that they should have presented and asked approval from council. So it's a lot more complicated than just the LSA, and we want to make sure that whatever choice we make now sets the right precedent that allows us to deal with upcoming faculty associations. To make up for these mistakes that we see. Because there's this Chinese saying, I don't know if it's appropriate to say here, that says if you don't know what the rules were, then you're not really wrong.
Can you say it in Chinese?
In Cantonese.
Oh, okay.
That's easy, I thought, sorry.
Got it. Okay.
So, I don't know if anyone understands that.
Oh, okay.
But I hope that's something everyone can keep in mind as we move forward, because whatever sanction, let's call it, we impose on the Law Students Association, we will also have to impose on, say, the Pharmacy Students Association. From this point forward, even though it is in Vice President Ortiz's hands, I'd like to say that I think from our executives, we hope to work as hard as we can to simply restore the harm that has been done. Work with the faculty associations together to ensure that they do what's in their best interest, and talk to their student body before putting forward a formal letter of support. And work together to hopefully put forward market modifiers that are in the best interest of students. And do you want to...
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
That was a really, really great summary by our president, so thank you. One thing I just wanted to emphasize is that the reason we keep talking about student consultation is because, like, legally, the institutions have to do that. One of the guidelines for submitting proposals is that they have to talk to the student association. And a student association is defined as a student's union, right? Which is why we push so hard to make sure that all students are included in the discussions around the proposal. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone knows that it's because the ministry has set this guideline in place.
I'm going to allow one more question, just because it was a very detailed and lengthy answer. So, which I think was pretty good. And I think it provides a good overview of what market modifiers are. So thank you very much. Councillor Khan. All right. I'm just going to move on. Just do the same thing as before. I have three people with questions on my speakers list. Someone can move to continue question period if they would like. Councillor Zhang, seconded by Councillor Shen. All those in favor of extending question period, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Right, that passes, so we'll continue with another 15 minutes of question period. Governor Hanserud.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm always surprised. You always cut me off guard on this one. This question is for the Vice President, Mr. Speaker. Do you think it's fair the analogy is completely ridiculous, but do you think it's fair to compare employment law and employment issues
with a democratically elected student government?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Speaker. Governor Hansara, since you are a student in law, I would hope you know that when we're discussing these issues in camera, we're not necessarily referring to employment law. We're referring to council's own bylaws and our own standards as we set them. And so that's the only thing I'm talking about. Council has set standards for how we want to proceed in terms of decision making. We're the ones that made those bylaws. And as executives and councillors, we are going to follow those bylaws until perhaps they may be changed. Thank you.
I think that question was sufficiently answered.
Oh, was it?
Councillor Chen, thank you for your opinion, Governor Hansara.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I don't know exactly what my question should point to whom. Fully executives and the chair of bylaw. So I noticed that, like, from the statements from Vice President Akinda and the president about the market modifier and the tuition, it's defined by, like, captured by, like, CPI or something. So, but we noticed that, like, for international students' tuition, there's two parts. One part is we're paying domestic students' tuition part, and also we have an international differential fee. And this part is for some program students. They have like a marking modifier as the international differential, which is not captured by the API. So on my understanding, I haven't seen any report from law students association or other faculty student association to. I don't know if they are also representing international students, like, to have two different planning or on the market modifier, or like they have been doing enough consultation for international students or something. I'm just kind of wondering or a little bit confused about the process.
Yeah, I can take that question. So it's a really, really big question. Just to explain a little bit more. So international students pay the tuition fees and international differential fees, which bring them up to quite a high amount. However, when international students are in programs like business, for instance, this business also has a market modifier. They pay more per course. Those students end up paying that modifier, but twice. So for instance, if I'm an international student and I'm in a program that increases my cost by $100 per class, I'd be paying that $100, but that $100 would also apply to the international differential fee. So international students are being hit a few times over. Hopefully that makes sense. This is what happened with the international differential fee increase that we saw last year. Students who were in professional programs faced a higher increase than students who were not. And you're right, this international fees currently are not regulated by the provincial government. And so any market modifier that applies to a program will apply more to an international student.
So like such as LSA or something, they are doing consultation. We saw some.
Sorry, Councillor Chen, if you have a follow-up question, I'll add you to the speaker's list. Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question will be for BPA or Discover Governance. Would either of them be amendable to perhaps council sending a representative to your question sessions before they start to maybe perhaps explain and make an argument of why council should be able to see that information, and perhaps in convincing the people you're interviewing that it would be okay for us to see that?
The confidentiality aspect of the investigation is just a part of the process, like we've done it in the past. It wasn't necessarily a request by the LSA. It's something that we just do automatically. If you want, I can ask them if they would be comfortable with sharing the information with council, and if they say no, then you can perhaps make your case with them if you want to, but...
So do you mean...
No, that's
sorry,
a follow-up
yeah.
question.
Okay.
Sorry. Would you just complete?
Sorry.
Governor Hansara.
Thank you, Council. I finished for you. Yeah, Council needs to listen to them, and sometimes when I deflect questions, you know, this is how you learn. So my question is for Vice President External, Mr. Speaker. So since you dodged the question quite effectively the last time, the question is this: do you think that a student body that has a student organization has 12% of the electoral of its electoral basis elected, elected at 12%, can go behind closed doors, behind and interview people behind closed doors in a system that's not transparent, and be recognized or to sanction an organization? And do you think that's transparent and accountable?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for that lovely question. As I said before, and I guess I'll spare council me repeating anything I've already said, we are, as council, a duly elected body of student representatives, right? Our students have elected us. We are official in the eyes of the government and in the eyes of the university. So when we make rules and bylaws, we will follow them because we are an organization that really follows good procedure, because we are accountable and because we are transparent. And because we follow those principles, we will base our actions on what the books have said. And in my eyes, that is accountable and transparent. I'm sorry if the governor has a different opinion on what that definition means. But for council's sake, I will say that yes, this process is democratic and that it is transparent and accountable. And I would hope that we let this investigation occur and we can look at the results of the investigation after with clear eyes, and we can discuss that decision when the time comes.
Request for information.
You can choose to accept that or not. It's up to you.
Sure.
Is there somewhere in bylaw that specifically says that all the entire process must be confidential?
In bylaw, as far as I know, so someone can correct me if I'm wrong, the process for anything relating for a faculty association, especially in terms of like possibility of probation or derecognition, that's all up to the VPA, right? It's all vice president, academics, authority, and jurisdiction. The VPA has decided to delegate some of this process to an external body. But you know, in previous years or in the past, it's the sole discretion of the vice president, academic. And that's because council has created that in bylaw.
Request for information again.
Sure.
So would council be breaking bylaw that we've made if we broke confidentiality?
Confidentiality in regards to what?
So in terms of if the vice president decided in her own jurisdiction that she did not want to offer confidentiality to the people she'd interview, would that be breaking bylaw?
I'm not going to speculate. I don't know the answer to that because we haven't even gone through the process. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay. Because, like I said, it's up to the vice president academic, and the process has been outlined to council several times. So Discover Governance will follow the process, and at the end of the day, it's up to the VPA. And I can't speak on her behalf.
That's okay. Councilor Chen.
Okay. Just going back to the marking board question. So, look, I just didn't notice that. And there any faculty student association, if they are proposing an intuition increase or something, they did any consultation of, like, related to international students. And I don't know if student union is still, like, representing this part and forcing them to do enough consultation on this.
I'll take the question.
Yeah.
Thanks for the reminder, Councillor Chen and Mr. Speaker. It's interesting because right now it's been a struggle for us to ask faculty associations to do any consultation at all. So I will keep in mind that as we have those conversations about student consultations around fee increases, that we pay some attention to the international student body and remember that the increase will mean a lot more to them than a domestic student.
Councilor Jadik.
Next question is for Discover Governance. Is council involved in the process that you are currently going through?
The investigation process?
Yes.
No.
Thank you.
Councilor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question will go to VPA. If the VPA decided that she did not want to offer confidentiality to the individuals she's interviewing, would she be breaking any bylaws?
No, but I...
Thank you, Mr.
Can I please defer the rest of that to President Lau?
Sounds like that practice to me.
Oh.
Then not to offer confidentiality to someone in
This isn't a discussion. This is a question period. If you have a question, you can feel free to ask the president. Councilor Allard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a question for the governance or the BPA. And pardon, once again, my ignorance of the process, but would you be amenable to reconsidering your approach to the compilation of the reports to include other methods of confidentiality, like, for example, and I don't have enough information to provide better examples, but maybe not using names attached to direct quotes and things like that, so that the entire report can be shared with the council without breaching confidentiality, as opposed to only your findings and justifications being shared?
Much of the report will actually be like that already, but as to whether or not we're concerned about the confidentiality piece with the final report, that's really up to the BPA as to whether or not she feels they can be shared.
And I would like to defer to President Lau.
Thank you, Vice President Wentz. I hope that council can understand why it's hard to promise for a process that we will deliver and publicize A, B, and C. It's really hard to ask for a commitment to publicize information when we don't know exactly what the information we'll be collecting is. I hope you understand that it's in our students' union's values to be transparent and to be accountable. And I really stand by what my Vice President has said today in begging for council's understanding to let the investigation occur and to assess the level of accountability and transparency in the report when you see the final product.
Governor Hanser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question, based on my understanding, under the Post-Secondary Learning Act, the student union is quasi-government organization compared to the student, similar to what how Métis are in the Métis Settlement Act. With that being said, therefore, under this, as a government organization, we should be a public organization and a transparent organization, similar to how governments respond to public inquiries in such matters. With that being said, my question is referred to the Vice President Academic or Ms. Taylor. You mentioned that the formal investigation starts tomorrow. But based on my understanding, you met with the LSA President on Friday under the premise that was part of the investigation. That's what, based on my understanding, was his understanding. So I'm kind of curious, when did the investigation start? Did it start on Tuesday or did it start on Friday?
Thank you for the question. On Friday, I met with the president of the LSA to talk about what was going to happen going forward, to give him a timeline and make sure that he didn't have any questions about what the process was going to be like. It was me telling him, like, okay, this investigation is going to happen. I'm going to send the letter either on Friday or on Monday. I sent it on Monday. I made sure that he understood that at the end of the investigation, and I haven't made a decision about what's happening at the end, that there's a possibility, there's three possibilities. You can, as BPA, drop the investigation, place on probation, or de-recognize. I made sure that he understood all of that. It was basically just sort of an understanding meeting, an information meeting. It wasn't, I wasn't asking any sort of questions that were related to what they did or like what happened. Nothing really like that. It was just like me making sure he knew what was up.
Okay, I'm going to offer one more question. Councilor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question will be for President Lau. I am wondering, just to follow up on what he mentioned earlier, and is hesitant to make all this information public. Does he believe that making this information public to the public, the general public, and the student body is the same as making this information available to council in a closed camera session?
No, I don't. I don't think it's the same.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
That wraps up the next 15 minutes of question period. I currently have 3 speakers on my speakers list, so if someone wants to make a motion to extend question period, you can certainly do so.
I'll do it.
Councillor Zhang, seconded by Councillor Khan. All those in favor of extending question period, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. All those opposed? Wonderful. So we close the question period. Does anyone wish to be noted as an abstention? Governor Hansra, Councillor Kwan. All right, so we'll move on to the rest of the agenda. Council is amenable. We're supposed to recess in 5 minutes. We can pass 7A in the next 5 minutes and recess after that, or we can recess immediately and then move on with the rest of the agenda. So for now, I'll just move on to item 7A. Lau Hodgson moved to appoint 2 members of Students' Council to the Students' Union Strategic Planning Committee. President Lau, would you like to introduce?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So as all of you should know, the Students' Union is going through a strategic planning process this year. It's one that goes through every 4 years, so it's a great opportunity to get involved with the long-term direction that our Students' Union will take. And there are 2 seats open for Students' Councilors. So what this might look like in regards to the community. We're hoping to have our first meeting in the last week of September. Most meetings that we will have as a committee will be 2 to 4 hours long. We will be pitching after the first 2 meetings whether or not weekend meetings will work. But from between the end of September to January, we hope to have a total of 6 meetings, so average probably, let's say, 2 each month. And by January, we'll have a draft plan that we will cycle to senior managers and probably the larger student body. And in the winter semester, we will only have 1 meeting to review and revise in January. So that we hope to have the strategic plan completed by February or March, so that it would align not only with the budget, but be open and accessible for elections as well. So with that, I would love to address any questions regarding this, and if not, we can move forward with nominations.
Does anyone have any questions for President Lau? Yes, Councilor Singer.
Who sits on the committee?
Okay. So on this committee, we'll have myself as the Students' Union President, 1 Vice President, the General Manager, 2 Students at Large, 1 Senior Manager, 1 General Staff Member, 2 Councillors, 1 Students' Union Executive alumnus, and 1 member from the university administration that will be non-voting.
Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This committee, I have my own understanding of what strategic planning means, so I'm wondering if this committee will do any type of analysis, like SWOT analysis or e-scanning?
Yep, that's the plan for meeting 2, which is hopefully in mid-October.
So the committee itself will be doing that work, or people will be doing that work and presenting to
it? The committee will probably start, and there'll be pre-work done as well.
Okay.
Any other questions for President Lau? Seeing none, we'll move into nominations. Are there any nominations? Yes, President Lau.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Sleeman.
Councillor Sleeman, do you accept?
Accept.
Councillor Gore?
I'd like to nominate myself.
President Lau?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Jacobson.
Councillor Jacobson, do you accept?
I do.
Vice President Hodgson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to nominate Councillor Zhang.
Councillor Zhang, do you accept?
Yes, I do.
Are there any further... Oh, Councillor Shan.
I'd like to nominate Governor Hansra.
Governor Hansra, do you accept?
No.
Are there any further nominations? Yes, Councillor.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Khan.
Councillor Khan, do you accept?
I do not.
Any further nominations? Seeing none. Move into a runoff style, whatever you want to call this, nomination election. Following that, you'll submit your votes, then we'll take a 15-minute recess, and then I'll announce whoever won after that 15-minute recess. So we'll go in the order when councillors were nominated. So starting with Councillor Sleeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe it can be very helpful because I'm sitting on the fall meeting with us also. And we're planning that, and I feel like that's long term as well. Also, from economics, I feel like you have like a long term vision of things happening. And yeah, so that I really like to say on this meeting.
Short and sweet. Councillor Gore.
I think I'd be a good counselor because as an international student, I'll provide a different perspective as other students. And I think in most of the cases, international students are neglected because of their number in council or on campus. So I think I'll provide a different perspective as compared to the counselors.
Thank you, Councillor Gore. Councillor Jacobson.
Hi, guys. First, I'd like to thank President Lau for the nomination. I'd really like to sit on this committee. I've been sort of involved in the SU kind of tangentially for my whole degree here, having a lot of really close friends that have been executives in the past and counselors in the past. I've kind of seen where things have come from over the last 5 years. This is my first year myself being involved directly in the student union in the form of council, but I also have a lot of experience in student groups on campus and specifically with strategic planning in my fraternity. I think I'd be a valuable member of this planning committee, so please vote for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Jacobson. Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As with all my other committees, I think I will be amazing for this committee. This strategic planning is what I do for my job. I work for the Strategic Policy and Planning Unit in the Government of Alberta. So SWOT analysis, enterprise risk management, e-scanning, that is basically what I do on a day-to-day basis. So I think I will not only understand the committee well, but be able to contribute to it in a really beneficial manner. Other than that, as a counselor, I promise to help ensure that this committee and its initiatives are accountable and transparent to the city council.
Thank you very much, Councillor Zhang. So now we will go to a preferential ballot because there are four candidates for two positions. So what I'll ask you to do is grab a piece of paper, write down the candidates in order of your preference from 1 to 4. Sure. Can I just write them on the whiteboard? Is that sufficient?
Anybody care?
So, Gabe, again, put the names in order of your preference. Number 1 is your first preference. Number 4 is your last. You can also add a number 5, being none of the above, if you really wish. Throw a note in there wherever you want. But these are the candidates from council. Hopefully everyone can actually read that. If you can't, let me know, and I'll put it up on the big screen. Thank you, Councillor Zhang. You're welcome.
Should we just, pass it down?
It doesn't really matter. We're going for a recess anyways. So we'll recess until 7:58. Love it. Oh, someone's upset. Okay, yeah, I think this is actually the first meeting we've missed. Yeah, he's pretty good about stuff. He was even coming when he had exams. It was pretty awesome. I just have a simple question. Any other ballots? Going once? Going twice? Thanks. Anyone else? Awesome.
They have five checks. They started with three. They found two more. The president committed the first one. And then the committee became the president in September. And now he's going to be the president. So I have three exact numbers. I hope the LG say they solve all their shit.
Yeah.
Same with the ISA. It's like both of them are having trouble right now. So I think they're going to have like Dina C. Thomas.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it worked out. According to their constitution, I am allowed to appoint.
You did miss the vote. Just because you're the president.
Because I am older than. I think I actually want to fight because most of the time I was involved with them, but I just didn't
because of this, like when Jordan was still president before he shut down and he emailed me, my thought was that him and I were talking about restructuring the RMBA and have a better relationship with all of the different associations. Also, Resident Services sits on the RHA Council. It doesn't make any sense that the Residence Hall Association advocates for students living in residence.
Right.
It's a weird thing.
Yeah, because then they.
We'll see. Can you see
one
time?
She's correct.
Actually, that's a problem. It's
not good. The bylaw, like, all of them are tonic and bad.
So they're older people.
They're like, oh, they're all different. They're all tonic and bad. Our bylaw, we're going to do like it in a bit. So we're going to have to do a lot of work. So, like, when they were like, oh, shit, this person was 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 like, oh, shit, this person was
like, oh, shit, this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh,
shit, this person was like, oh, shit,
this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this
person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this
person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was
like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh,
shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh,
shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person
was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this
person was like, oh, shit, this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit,
this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit,
this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this
person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh,
shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like,
oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit,
this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, this person was like, oh, shit, thing for 3 hours of driving.
These bylaws aren't tight.
I want to figure out what's happening.
So we'll make these bylaws.
It's like, yeah, she was no first or Jamie.
I only got lawyers.
They can have it. They can have it.
Started without the president will drive. So I have to set them in order. That's what I call it. I have to build that rapport with every RA.
So your brother has a rapport.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to try to get the position.
You need any ladies yet?
So we had a discussion about what. So my opinion was very large.
Yeah. So like,
There's still two more items on there. The next one, I don't think will actually take that long. The one after that is going to take 5 minutes. Hey.
You too.
I was at work. So yesterday I was at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. It takes me half an hour to get to work. Not including the time. It takes me to get ready and all that stuff. Finish work.
Because you have to make yourself beautiful.
Of course. Went to my second job, was there until... Got home at 12:15. P.M. or A.M. Whatever. Got up again this morning, was at work by 7:15. And not here.
Ew.
No break.
Gross. How many jobs are you working? 3? Why? You don't need to be that rich.
Well, it's not going to actually be that much higher. Especially when you're just lowly on the totem pole. Alright! You reconvene council at 8 o'clock.
I'll see you.
Please take your seats. Right. We'll move on with the rest of the agenda. Alright, so we're going to move on with the rest of the agenda. Move on to item 7B. Hodgson moves Bill 4, the DFU reform bill, in first reading. Thank you. So, I'll open this in a Google document or in Word. Is that the latest one?
The one I just sent to you.
That's the guy. 6 months of work. That's 136
emails.
That's not that many. I used to have like 4,500.
I have a 10.
Unread. Girl, go look at your email.
Oh my god.
I like checking email every single day.
Is that sufficiently visible to everyone? Okay, so this is the final motion as presented by Vice President Hodgson. Is there a seconder for this motion?
Request for information.
Yes.
Were the results available from the...
Oh, yes, that's great. Good call. So, congratulations to Councillor Jacobson and Councillor Sleeman. All right. So, Councillor Wang seconded this particular motion. Vice President Hodgson, would you like to introduce?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this is the combination of the DFU Task Force. You should have all received the report, both, I believe, last time, the final version of the meeting, but the final version will be a pretty one, so we'll try something for that too. This is a project I started last year as a counselor, and it didn't get quite where I wanted to, so I started it as the Vice President of Operations and Finance again this year. And I'm glad to say it has culminated in this. So these are the first principles of the bylaw. If you haven't read the report, feel free to question me on whatever. I'll kind of try to go through what everything right here. So these are based off a series of six recommendations from the task force. The first recommendation was to move... So currently, how it stands is there is bylaw 2200, which outlines how a plebiscite or referendum can occur. There is bylaw 3000, which kind of classifies our fee structure. And then bylaw 6000, which kind of entails some of the oversight mechanisms on DFUs. It is also the only place in bylaw DFU, the term DFU is used, even though it's kind of part of the nomenclature of the VSU. As well as 6,000 outline mandates. So the first recommendation was about centralizing all mentions of DFU into one area of bylaw, as opposed to having it kind of peppered and it not being very clear where DFUs fall in bylaw, is to create a 6,000 series of bylaw, similar to the 8,000 series. So a 6,100, a 6,200, and I think likely we're looking right now at also a 6,300. What is in those exact bylaws will be... come out in second reading, where the second reading is being developed right now is based on these recommendations. And likely it will be 6,100 is the kind of creation process. 6,200 will outline the operational DFUs, which is the next part, and 6,300 will be the granting DFUs. So, the next bit, creating two categories of DFUs. In our study of the DFU, it was very clear that there are kind of two different kinds. There are ones where the money is used as an operating grant, so the Gateway, ACERG, Student Legal Services, CJSR, and the Student Refugee Program run by WUSC. All of these organizations work where we give them a lump sum of money and they choose how to use it. Now, WUSC is the kind of in-between child here because their funding is very specifically designated, about 95% of it, but they do have a 5% administration cost, so what the, as you can see in the principle there, the discrepancy or the difference between the two, if it's 100% granting, it's a granting DFU. If it's any going to operational administration costs, it's an operational DFU. So with granting DFUs, we have Gold Bears Panda Legacy Fund and Campus Management Fund. These are granting bodies groups of people or students can apply to for money. So that's the kind of difference between creating a granting pot of money and creating an operating grant for an organization. Additionally, as part of the operational bit, it's not in there, but it is in the report, operating grants in order to receive them a DFU, you need to either be a student group, a registered society, or a SU service, with the plan to transition that group to a registered society within about a year. That's one we're going to work on. I'm going to be working with WUSC over the next little while on that, as they're the only DFU that is currently not a registered society. Next point, timelines for DFU creation rules shall be clarified and made explicit. Time will be allowed for students union to adequately consider a question. So right now in the creation process, there's not really any finite timelines. Like there are some, but you have to work back based off of it's 30 days to do this, 90 days to do this. We're going to add in exact dates that things need to be done by, as well as clarify whose responsibility is to get certain segments done.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hodgson. We'll move into debate. Is there any debate on the motion? Councilor Lark.
I'm just going to say, one document.
Yes, Councilor Farouk.
This DFU bill also address the time span. The idea where that you would referendum every 5 years, or was that a different model?
Should I say that again?
This is also address the issue where we're talking about the money going towards DFU is going to referendum that would be every 5 years, or is that different?
So that's also in there. That is the point. DFU shall be moved to a 5-year plebiscite cycle as opposed to the current referendum cycle. References to Class C and D fees shall be eliminated. Currently, how it stands...
Sorry, Vice President Hodgson, is this a speaking turn, or are you...
Oh, sorry, I'm getting carried away.
Governor Hansra. Is there any other debate on the motion?
Well, I wanted to.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And so I'll address that point there. So currently how it works in bylaws, there's four classes of fees, A, B, C, D fees. The only class A fee is the Access Fund. It's a fund created for us for students in need to apply to. It's kind of our own little baby, so it's in a separate category. Class B fees are all the DFUs currently. Class C fees are Class A fees with a couple other extra things added, and Class D fees are Class B fees with those same couple things added. What those two things are a five-year referendum cycle and a mandatory online opt-out. The way it's structured in bylaw right now is a Class B fee, A or B fee, will move to a C or D fee if they ever increase beyond CPI, or any new DFU that is created past like 2009 will be classified as a Class CD fee. What I'm proposing there is we eliminate the Class CD fee, we get rid of the referendum cycle and move to a plebiscite cycle that is actually implemented immediately. So every DFU will go to plebiscite every 5 years. It'll be structured on a, we'll do a random number generator to see who goes first. We will do them all at once. They'll be spread out. This is something I have just about unanimous consent from the DFUs from right now. There's still a couple things to clarify, but 6 out of the 7 DFUs are happy with this because previously they encountered a lot of risk by possibly moving to going for an increase because they move on to this 5-year referendum cycle, which the referendum occurs in March. They would lose their funding in May. So it gives them kind of 2 months. And usually their disbursement would come out in September, October. So it's more about 6 months to plan for an organization being completely defunded. So, for example, the APERG losing all of its... Because APERG is about 95 to 100% funded by the DFU. They would lose all of their funding and have to plan on how to continue as an organization in about 6 months. And it was determined that's too adverse of a risk for DFUs. And what is a more, I guess, equitable solution is to have this plebiscite cycle. Because the purpose of having a referendum cycle is to keep the groups accountable so that students can always weigh in on their opinion. And I was really happy to find that, or at least in my opinion, and all the DFUs and everyone in the task force opinion, that the plebiscite cycle achieves the same goal that the referendum cycle was meant to do. By every 5 years, students get to have a say in the fees they pay. Now, if a DFU succeeds overwhelmingly, I'm sure everyone will be happy. If it's a almost yes, almost no, I mean, it'll be up to the players involved as to what happens next if they fail a plebiscite. Say if you lose, it's 80-20. I really can't see the next council, because it would be the next council since the vote occurs in March, taking a stance on that DFU because there's an obvious expression of opinion by the students on paying this fee. It is the responsibility of everyone as student leaders that when this information is out there to possibly act on it. It also sends the signal to the DFU that, hey, maybe they're not advertising enough what their value is to students, maybe they're not providing the value to students. And it sends that message that they need to internally think about what they're doing and possibly restructure. And the reason I really like not legislating on that plebiscite, what occurs because of it, is that process can happen organically. So audit committee for the year can sit down with the DFU and talk about ways to restructure. We all, the council appoints board members to every DFU, so someone sits on every DFU's board. Put your hands up who you are, but like you can then have input at the board and say, as a board member, like, well, this plebiscite happened. You guys lost by this amount. Like, I think this shows some fundamental problems with the organization that need to be addressed. It doesn't say, like, oh, the DFU maybe had a bad year and the exec dropped the ball that year or the board and they're defunded, they're gone. Some an institution like the Gateway that's been around for years and years and years could just, like, won't be exposed to that kind of risk.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hodgson. President Lau.
I'd like to speak in favor of this bill. I think the reorganization. The pieces that are currently in bylaw will make it much easier for our successors to understand DFUs. I also think that administrating the opt-outs online centrally will allow for much higher accessibility of opt-outs when students ask and allow them to make these or take action more simply. And I think the 5-year plebiscite cycle is just ingenious. So props to Vice President Hodgson for moving that forward.
Um, Because we've had a number of speakers speak in favor of this motion, is there anyone who would like to speak against this particular motion, or who needs more clarification? Councilor Chen?
I'm mentioning the DFU meeting, but I still have a little bit concern about the process of the referendum, because I heard about some speaking in favor about this bill, but I still a little bit confused about the five-year planning, so five-year referendum, so how to make the students really comfortable since the first year you come to university and the fifth year might be left in university, and how to make the students really know about the process and make a really good choice on upvoting this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
All right, we'll continue on with the speakers list. Councilor Jacobson.
Can I defer my speaking turn to Vice President Hodgson? No?
I still have one more question.
Vice President Diaz.
I was going to echo President Lau's comments, as well as add that I was with VP Hodgson when we went to AFERC and had those two great discussions with AFERC, and it went really well. I was very excited for him. I can't speak on VP Hodgson's behalf, but my understanding is the five-year plebiscite cycle would allow students to give feedback to the dedicated B unit organizations on a five-year cycle, but that other mechanisms are still open to students, such as pursuing plebiscites or referendums.
Councilor Allard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question, clarification for VP Hodgson. It is my understanding that previously, if a DFU was seeking an increase of the CPI, they would remove that Class CD, and that came with a mandatory opt-out. So how will that process work now, since there's no class that has a specific opt-outs? There's no difference between DFUs in their classification for the the ones without an opt-out and the ones with an opt-out. So how will that process work?
Okay. Great question. Governor Hansrat.
Well, I was just curious which DFU organization was the holdout.
Katie? Just to clarify something so that it's clear to councilors, because we're into debate now, Vice President Hodgson has a limited amount of speaking turns, which is why he's not talking all the time, or else I would gladly allow him to, but I'm bound by standing orders. Also, when you're asking questions, you can direct them towards Vice President Hodgson, but it's more appropriate if you just direct them to the floor so that anyone on Students' Council can address your question. You can, they can do that anyways, but if you address it to the floor, it kind of opens the question to anybody. So, for example, one of the other executives or somebody who is on the DFU task force can also answer your question. Move on to Vice President Hodgson with your second speaking turn.
Cool. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for all the comments. So I'll start with Governor Hansrat. So they're not necessarily the holdout. Through all this, I've been talking with kind of individual contacts, the people in approaching all the organizations. They kind of not delegated, but I found the people who were most willing to provide comments, were willing to kind of actively read and analyze the stuff I sent out. So right now it's CJSR, but it is just one board member I've been conversing with, but he is the board member most interested in bylaw and policy and these kind of things. Not necessarily a holdout. In the initial communication, there was a lot of miscommunication. I think there was a lot of misunderstandings of what the proposal actually did, but their concern right now is very minor, and I don't foresee it holding anything up. We don't need unanimous consent of the DFUs to do this. I'm trying to get as much consent as possible through this process, but right now their only hang up is they want to be basically not go under the new system, but only because they just don't want to. I'll continue conversations with them, but I don't see it as, we kind of discussed it with the task force and we didn't see it as a major concern. As for the online opt-out, so that if you can go back to the principles and the last principle that's addressed, what I'm proposing was we move to we don't legislate on opt-out. It's up to each individual DFU whether they choose to be opt-out as part of the referendum question. If they so choose to be opt-out, though, the opt-out must be conducted online, and the SU will administer it. We have the system to do this. It's very easy. The only DFU this affects is APIRG. They're more than happy to do this because it takes a big headache off them of administering their opt-out. They may see slightly greater rates, but they really were not concerned about that. Their opt-out rate now is like extremely minimal. And we are going to administer it, which saves them cost, time, effort, a lot of things. So I think they were the only current DFU affected by that. They're happy with it. Any new DFU that chooses to be opt-out, their opt-out must be conducted online, and the SU will administer it. As for the 5 years, 5 years is the average lifetime of a student. Most students do take like 4+ years to finish their degree. Also, with 4 years, we end up having we're trying to find a balance between too long, too short, but 4 years with 7 DFUs, potentially 8 after this year, that's a lot of questions all the time. That's a lot of refreshing. 5 years we thought is the most appropriate. In posing those questions, they'll be a part of the executive election. So same as any referendum or plebiscite type question has to occur during the executive election, there'll be resources provided to a yes side, there'll be resources provided to a no side. It'll occur as any referendum or plebiscite question usually would, and we provide financial resources as we do for all campaigns in our election cycles. So it'll be the DFU's responsibility to get out there and make their case, but I don't think that's such a bad thing, especially for some DFUs that are maybe a little less visible and have less public content. They can get out there and say, this is what we do, here's what we use the money for, like here's how we provide value to students, or here's our value proposition, basically. Which I don't think is an unhealthy thing to get out there every 5 years, because some of these DFUs were passed many years ago and haven't really been considered, and honestly I think a lot of students don't know about them, so every student gets a chance to at least have input on the fees they pay during their lifetime,
which is something we advocate to the university all the time, but they don't do it, so we will.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hodgson. Once again, I'll ask, no one has really spoken against this motion. They've all sort of been clarification questions. Governor Hanser has called to question, and I saw Councillor Bannister's placard up, so I'm also assuming she's going to second that motion to call to question. Is there anyone opposed to calling to question? Put it that way. Wonderful. So we'll just go to a vote. So, this item, Hodgson Huang, move Bill 4, the DFU Reform Bill, in first reading based on the principles as they are listed here. Please raise your placards. All those opposed? All those opposed?
No.
It is both.
That's why it's important to pay attention, Councillor Sleeman. Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Mr. Santoma for Councillor Champagne. Anyone else? Wonderful. That's... keep this open. And we'll move on to the last item in our agenda. Item 7C, Kinda Oridzik move that the Students' Council define the minimum requirement that must be met by Student Representative Association in order for Council to consider an SRA's wishes to advocate contrary to Students' Union's... Actually, sorry, that email, right?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I just remembered that.
Sorry?
The
cap.
Didn't we move 7E onto the main agenda as well?
Yes, 7E is after this motion. Did I say this is the last motion?
Yeah.
My bad.
Pay attention.
You want to start this, Councillor Smith? Be careful. So, Kinda Oridzik moved that Students' Council define the minimum requirements that must be met by Student Representative Association, SRA, in order for Council to complete an SRA's wishes to advocate contrary to Students' Union policy as follows. The Student Representative Association will conduct a plebiscite and a general meeting prior to presenting to Students' Council and will present the results of the plebiscite to Council. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
So just before we move on to introductions, there was expression, I don't know if Vice President Kinda or Vice President Ordzik kind of like matched the two names together. I know that other members of the executive expressed that they wanted this motion to be a little bit more of an informal discussion. I don't know if the vice presidents would like to do that, or they'd like to have a formal debate on this particular
discussion.
So, is anyone in council opposed to having just more of an informal discussion? Basically, we're suspending standing orders without moving to suspend standing orders. Sure, we can. What does council think would be an appropriate time cap for this particular discussion?
15 minutes.
Is that adequate? Does council?
15 for the option, with the option to extend for 10 thereafter.
Sure. I'll just leave it up to 15 minutes right now. You can extend afterwards as many times as you would like, and to extend, we'll say. Same rules as question period. So let's go with a 2/3 majority every time you want to extend. None of that 5 placards business. All right, so I will allow Vice President Kinda to introduce the motion, and then we will discuss this informally. We can still have set time limits for people to speak so that somebody isn't filibustering or whatever. But like I said, it's kind of more to have an informal discussion. So, Vice President Kinda, with all that, please introduce your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could you pull up the one of the amendment? So, this motion is pretty self-explanatory, and the reason it's so wordy is because we want it to be really precise. This would apply for this academic year, so as long as, you know, we're elected representatives. If council wishes to make a bylaw about this later, that's up to council's discretion. But anyways, I'll explain this. So, moving forward, if an SRA comes to council and wishes to advocate against a political policy that we have, for example, the tuition policy, that SRA has to come to council with the results of their plebiscite, and they should have a meeting with their constituents before they come to council. This way, at council, we can look at the information that we have at hand, and then we can go from there and make any decisions from there. So this is, again, just for any future instance in which this happens. It's to clarify our own rules that we have right now. Do you have anything to add?
I would just like to talk for a minute about how we came by the amendment.
Oh, right.
For you.
Yeah, I can just quickly
mention that. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so when we submitted this to the main order papers, we didn't have the last part in it. So the last part, we were at the CAC meeting, and during the CAC, we came up with something more specific, which was the plebiscite and the meeting. So we thought that having this discussion at CAC would make it easier to have this discussion at council. We brought forward a few options to CAC. CAC discussed them, and we all decided that we voted that the option of having a plebiscite is the best one, since we can control it the most. You can accurately see who voted which way. It ensures that only students who are part of the program or faculty have a say in the matter, and it's generally a fair process, and it's not like it doesn't cost that much money or anything. So it was the best option for us. Hopefully, you feel the same way. Yeah, we can answer your questions for sure.
Wonderful. So we'll move into discussion. Just because of the limited amount of time that you would like to discuss for, I will limit speaking turns to 1.5 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Cool. So just so council knows, I have a timer on my phone with the total amount of time. I'll just keep resetting this clock for speaking turns. So just give me 1 second. Let me get some names down on here. All right, wonderful. So, start this off with Vice President Diaz.
I'd like to move a friendly amendment to fix a couple mistakes.
We'll leave the amendments for now. We can amend later. It's okay.
It's just like there's a duplicated word. And there's a mistake.
Two. Yeah, so that. Oh, okay. So we'll do that after.
Okay.
Councillor Khan.
question to VP Kinda. Why do you think this is an improved way to go along as opposed to what we did before, where we had the association come to council, and then amongst us we decided that we could have asked in response for such a plebiscite to happen? Why would that be improved over that situation like that?
Sure. So I'll answer that question, and I'll also bring up here to VTA. So what this does is, like, it ensures that there are minimum requirements in place, so it ensures consistency for, like, any situation we're in. I wasn't at that meeting, but I'm aware that when they came to make a presentation, you can't make a motion pertaining to the presentation in the same meeting, which is why, like, none of that happened. Does that make sense?
I didn't know that, but okay.
Yeah. So just general rules is, like, if you make a presentation about a topic in a meeting, you can't vote on it. Just due process, people will have enough time to think about it, etc. So this clarifies our existing bylaws. And I can defer to Kevin or if she wants to add anything to that.
Yeah. I quite see it as a communication mechanism with our associations. There's an sort of a expectation that they do some kind of consultation before they come to council, but what kind of consultation that is you know, unclear.
Point of inquiry, in a situation like that, when LSA went to meet with us, could we have asked at the end of it, at the very least, for a plebiscite?
So, okay, so first addressing what Vice President Kinda said in her speaking turn, basically, if you have a presentation, you can't make a motion on the same subject of the presentation at the same meeting. So that's why when President Lau was talking about setting up an emergency Students' Council meeting, that's why he would have had to do that, so that if standing orders weren't suspended, they could move that motion at this emergency Students' Council meeting and then move forward that way. In terms of a plebiscite, it's really tough to say because, I mean, yeah, that's something that I probably have to dive into a little bit just because it's not really mandated in bylaw anywhere. But I mean, council has lots of authority, so yeah.
Yeah, and furthermore, I think the timelines from that, yeah, back then are really constricted, so I don't know if we would have even had time to turn up plebiscite. And I think the issue here was that the association wrote a letter of support before getting approval from council, essentially. Yeah.
All right, move on. Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question would be, so if we pass this motion, can we enforce this on, like, perhaps other FAs that are making proposals, or do we have to make this file?
Oh, yeah, no, this motion is pertaining to anything in the future, like, for this year.
Okay, so yeah. It is...
Yeah, possible. So okay. Anything from, like, this point forward.
Perfect.
For this year.
All right. Wonderful. Councillor Farouk.
Seeing as the motion is to define requirements for SRAs who potentially want to break put a motion that would potentially break bylaw, would we also be defining timeline to how old the plebiscite would be? Seeing as the current situation with the LSA was that all evidence that they had that students supported the increase was a number of years old, is that what we're trying to find as well, to have like an appropriate timeline within which the plebiscite would be using it as evidence be used. Hope that was fair.
So I think if I understand your question, by having a plebiscite, it would like alleviate those concerns. Because, for example, if I'm an exec in an association and I want this modifier to go through, for instance, it's in my best interest to convince my student body to do so. And then if they hold a plebiscite, it's up to the students to vote yes or no. So it would like necessarily have to be based on present information or the present proposal, right? And like any plebiscite clearly outlines a question in it, and there's a clear yes or no vote or none of the above, whatever. And so I think that would alleviate those concerns that you have. If anyone else has seen that.
I guess what my question was, how old information can be? Like, what did that question a year ago or 2 years ago?
The plebiscite, like that. The process of conducting a general meeting and having a plebiscite like is consultative. So like it is a current consultative process. Right? I hope that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Councillor Gruelke?
Pass.
Governor Hansrow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With
with the vice president, I know there's a legal opinion coming with the vice president is the interest in tabling this until we get a more clear answer if bylaw 8100 is being said that are even legal.
What can you do that?
The rules, 8100, is legal.
So, I'm not going to speak on a legal opinion, but what I will say is that in this.
Of course, it's going to defer this definition until we get legal.
It's up to the president to decide, but I'm going to speak to many things. So, in provincial legislation, Students' Union is defined as a corporation. And as a corporation, we're able to make our own rules about who we delegate power to and how we conduct our process. And so, the SU has delegated authority to SRAs or FAs to represent their students. And that also means that by being a part of the Students' Union, in order to officially advocate on behalf of the organization of the SU or any FA, you have to follow SU political policy, right? That does not restrict, and like I'm not aware, but that does not restrict freedom, like individual freedom of speech, right? As a law student or whatever, as any student, you're able to speak your mind about whatever you want. But as a corporation representing, like officially representing students, you have to follow political policy. And so that's currently where it stands.
Councillor Khan.
Back to BP Kindle. Will any exceptions be made on essentially if it was an issue that was time sensitive? Let's use LSA for an example. A situation where they need to act based off of a certain deadline. Something there wouldn't be time to essentially set up a plebiscite.
Right. I think my answer to that is I don't think they actually have to respond right away because, like we said, like these deadlines are being imposed by the provincial government, right? And, like, yes, students are being cornered, but they don't have to act. Like, they don't have to write a letter of support. I think, and if we
I'm
do
just
that,
saying that within my hypothetical, let's say there is a deadline.
So there was a deadline, though, right? Like, there has
to be. But you're suggesting that they didn't have to meet it. Mm-hmm. I'm saying here there is a hard deadline. In a situation like that.
Imposed by, like, that's the thing. Like,
university. Government.
Yeah, but even as like government imposing a deadline, you don't have to respond, or even the university, like they don't have authority over a student association in that sense, right? And so I don't foresee a situation.
Just making sure I'm clear. So you would prefer that they follow the deadline, essentially follow the procedure of student union above all else, assuming that they don't, get sued or do something illegal by not meeting that deadline.
So my opinion on that is that in order to act accurately represent student opinion, they have to follow a proper process. Like, and that's all contingent, again, on having enough time to do that, right? And so the only people, like nobody can force an association, like outside of the students who need to do something.
Councillor Kruelke.
My question is for the VPs. Why did you decide to bring this as student council to provide the minimum requirements rather than bringing what you feel would be the minimum requirements and having us debate it? I feel like the policy says that student, or the motion reads that student council to define the minimum requirements that must be met by a student representative. Instead, why did you just choose that path instead of bringing what you thought were the minimum requirements and having like us debate those as we would for principals?
Sure. So, we wanted to give council like most open space to discuss this, right? Like we don't want to shove anything down your throats. So if you feel this is appropriate, by all means, council should vote on it. That's essentially it. We wanted an open forum for discussion and debate because we know this is a sensitive topic.
Councillor Shang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for Vice President Kinda. So am I correct in understanding that because the FAs get their authority from the SU, any deadline imposed by the government or any external body, like there is absolutely no obligation for an FA or any SRA to follow the deadlines imposed by a government or external body?
Sure. So let me just give more context about this. So the window opened for the submission of market modifier proposals, right? In the guidelines, the government said the institution must submit their proposal by this date, which was originally October 15th. So the university, in order to submit that proposal, the university has to collect a whole bunch of things. The university has to outline what students think, what their reactions were to the proposal, how this will affect students, they have to talk about the market, a whole bunch of stuff. And so it's the university administration, especially in regards to the LSA situation, who were trying to speed up the process. For whatever reason, I can't say. And that's why, you know, the administration said we want this proposal done by the end of August. It's not what the government said, it was the administration. And so the administration talked to the dean about that, the dean brought that to the Law Students Association. And so that's where we're getting these constricted timelines. It's not like anybody from the government is saying, oh, you have to have it done by the end of August. So as a Students Association, a student union, this is worrisome for us, right? Like, students are being cornered to have to make a decision without being given enough time to talk to students, when in reality, they actually could have enough time. And which is why now we've seen the two proposals brought back to the university that were originally submitted. And now we'll have time, hopefully, to kind of restart that process if things work out, right? And so now we can probably consult these students, and which I think is a really a good thing to happen.
Vice President Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll cover some of the point of parliamentary inquiry. Are we like asking questions or can I just talk?
You can just talk.
Okay, sweet.
Feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to address something to build off to, I guess, this narrative of timelines and something that Councillor Khan brought up is that, like, any timeline that is imposed is imposed, like, somewhat arbitrarily. Like, the government may say these proposals are open at any time, but if the LSA or any FA feels that this is what they need, they can advocate for it at any time and start conversations around it as long as the proper consultation process is followed. And yes, sometimes it's tight when these apparent timelines might come down and it might seem like that is of more importance, but I mean, again, like this example, like will we have a more or less arbitrary timeline that's set where we can't do proper consultation, and that can consistently happen because the timeline can be whatever the administration or whatever the government says the timeline is, and I don't think we should let that, these somewhat arbitrary timelines, overwrite our really students' right to be consulted on a fee. On these kind of things. This is what we've been fighting for through advocacy for years and years and years, that we're not necessarily opposed to these fees happening, but you have to consult students and meaningfully consult students, not just kind of fly by the seat of their pants and what they're doing, but meaningfully consult students about a fee increase. Students have a right to have a say in their fees.
You hear that? Council Farouk.
Can we go back to the questions I have?
Sure.
So, just from the points that were spoken, I think we're more than understanding what VP Hodgson and VP Kim have said, that the LSA, over the deadlines imposed on them, they weren't required to submit any market, any kind of proposals at all, because they have the right to withhold any proposals as well. I think it's the right to remain silent, if I understand this correctly. It's the right to remain silent on that position, and say that we may or may not want to talk about that this time. And the other thing I want to briefly talk about is if the proposed deadline now is October 18th, and we're saying that we want SRAs who want these kind of proposals, want to make these kind of proposals to consult students, would that mean that there may or may not be a plebiscite concerning that issue with the LSA coming up quickly, or no? Or is that something that's up in the air?
Are you asking if this will apply to, you know, it depends. It depends on, like, the investigation that's going on. It depends on if they'll get a chance to go through the consultation again. I can't say.
Can we do a follow-up on
that? Yeah.
Okay. So if the investigation goes and the LSA doesn't have the ability to question their own students and ask them, would that mean that council could have the power to ask publicize their lost bikes specifically or not?
I believe so.
All right, with that, our 15 minutes is up. If council's interested, there are 5 speakers that wanted to discuss whatever issue relating to this particular motion. You can extend. If you'd like, President Lau, seconded by Vice President Kinda. All those in favor of extending, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. That looks like 2/3. So extend it by another 15 minutes. That works. So keep going with, again, Vice President Diaz starting us off.
Remember what I was talking about when I first put my hand up, but I have something else I could talk about. I like the way this is worded right now, personally. Over the past month, though, and this is a separate thing, I've been working with the Doctor of Medicine students and the Medicine Students Association. They're conducting a referendum within their faculty on whether or not their students want a spring-summer U-Pass that gets assessed to them in winter. The dentistry students did it last year. And they said, okay, we want to do it in this by-election, it's a short timeline, but they're going to be reaching out to consult their students in a couple weeks and then holding that referendum in a month. It was easy for them to put that together. It took us a couple weeks over the summer, and the plebiscite, the referendum question is going to get to med students in the Doctor of Medicine program, and they're like the two mixed programs that are running in 2 weeks when the by-election happens. It was really simple. We haven't been approached for any other websites or referendums, and it's very easy to do it. All I have to do is send an email. That was my experience of setting it up. It was really easy, and actually kind of fun, because everybody was really happy.
Thank you, Vice President Diaz. Governor Hanstra.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's pretty solid. I think it provides consultation. It provides an outline of what faculty associations need to do. So it's good. The only issue I have, the only concern I have, and this does not need to be addressed today, it goes back to my previous statement. Vice President Sternel defined the student union as corporations. In my opinion, it's more of a quasi-government organization. It's similar to what they have in the Making Settlement Act. And because of that, that's where the SU, you know, and I haven't really looked into this. This is what law students are telling me, but that there may be an issue with freedom of, you know, expression. Regardless of what that said, I think this should pass, because taking it out, if that's what the legal level says when it comes out, that's easy to take out, that's easy to strike out. But for now, this is a fast evolving situation. There's deadlines on October 15th. I still think the deadlines may even be pushed to later. Two faculty associations need to know what the process is to get the ball rolling on that, and that's why I think it's probably in the best interests of the student union organization, maybe not the faculty association, but based on the student union's best interest, it's best to provide a mechanism.
Thank you, Governor Hansera. Move on to Councillor Khan.
My question is just about how that publicized itself is set up. Like, let's say it's in a situation where it's in the summer and the class of that year isn't set in stone. Or at least, let's say the med faculty, where a third of the students going into that year, nobody knows who they are. In a situation like that, this is to a whole anything being used. In a situation like that, do you mind just having a publicized based off of the students that are known to be registered, like, or what's known to the association?
Anyone want to take that question?
Sure. So you asked about, like, students this summer or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, this process, plebiscite will come to council, and I think, it's pretty clear as councillors that once school is in session, that's when students should be consulted. So it was one of our concerns that we had this year, was that, all these decisions were being made at the end of August when no one was on campus. I personally think it's quite implicit. If you want to make an amendment, that's totally fine. But I think as counselors, we know that to expect that students be on campus will be consulted. So that's a good point. Yeah.
Okay. Move on to Councillor Zhang.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak in favor of this motion. Please, anybody correct me if I'm wrong. From my understanding, the responsibility of the plebiscite referendum falls on the FA. So if the government sets a deadline which doesn't allow the FA to conduct a plebiscite referendum or have the proper constituency to conduct a referendum or plebiscite, I think I would encourage the FA to work with the SU to advocate to the government that when they set maybe not even hard deadlines, but their own deadlines on plebiscites and proposals, that it gives the FA enough time to conduct those processes. And I think that one thing that's kind of dangerous is that if the FA start telling the SU, okay, we don't have enough time to do a plebiscite, so now we have to bypass this, it's kind of pitting the FA against the SU. And I think that the FA really should work together to ensure that when the government is setting proposal deadlines, that it's responsible and allows a plebiscite to be conducted.
Wonderful. Thank you. Councillor Allard.
I would like to speak in favor of this with some minor concerns. One, I do agree with Councillor Fruit that I'm concerned that there is some ambiguity in the timeline, in that even in the LSA's presentation to us, they mentioned a general meeting that happened 2 years ago. So I think it wouldn't necessarily weaken the wording if you were to include something that may be specified that the plebiscite and the meeting have to occur within the academic year, or I don't know what the wording is, but I think clarifying the timeline, clarifying that old information with previous students in the program isn't necessarily acceptable information. And also, because the plebiscite questions are from the creation of the plebiscite falls within the domain of the FA, I'm wondering if it's possible to include something in which the FA has to submit the wording of the plebiscite to Students' Union, considering that we are the ones who have to make sure that the plebiscite question is in line and clear, that, like, it's clear that what they're doing is advocating for a Students' Union policy.
Just point of information.
Sure.
This only applies to this academic year, correct? So what you're talking about would be in bylaws then, or with your general meeting.
Just answer the question. It's fine.
As far as I'm
here anyone.
And this was just, I don't know, maybe she was the one who just told me this, that this is not a bylaw. So how this is reflected in bylaw would be based on interpretation of this. So I'm just, I don't, and that's why I mean, I don't know, maybe we don't have to include like specifics, but just include in the word.
All right, we'll move on. Councillor Dueck.
I would also like to speak in favor of this. I think this really does empower FAs to be able to consult their students. The reason being is that if we have something that we can refer to as a faculty association that's sort of above our own mandate, we'd be able to really push back against, say, the administration or like a government that's imposing an unrealistic deadline. I would say I'm in favor of it because it sort of empowers faculty associations to consult their students as well, better than they would be able to have.
Councillor Bannister.
I am actually not in favor of this. Just because I'm in favor of the general concept, but I'm really not in favor of the plebiscite aspect. Just I've heard lots of concerns from other councillors, and I do tend to agree that it's a little bit restrictive, just because I'm aware and conscious that this is only for this year. But I think that it's just too strict, and that if we do, hopefully we don't encounter other problems like this, but if we do, I think we'd be better off having a slightly more general like way of consulting students that isn't necessarily like it's a plebiscite or nothing. So I'll personally not be voting in favor of this unless the plebiscite is changed to something that allows us a little bit more flexibility depending on situations that may arise in the future. But I am in favor of the concept, just not the plebiscite. But I think the plebiscite is important enough that it's not worth, like, it's worth discussing.
Do you want to respond to that directly, Vice President Tias?
Yeah. So the process for running a plebiscite is we contact RO Statistics through the emails. We contact White Matter, which is our tech provider, they have an agreement with the university to handle those emails to provide election services. So honestly, if we can set up a plebiscite in under a week, it's just a matter of the cost. If you hold a plebiscite during a by-election, there's almost no cost because we're already paying for the by-election and they just lump it in with that service they provide us.
Yeah.
If we wanted to hold the plebiscite off of our by-election election cycle, we'd pay an additional fee to White Matter. It's super simple to set up. It goes directly to all of the students.
Okay, can I respond to that?
Sure.
I very much understand the concept of plebiscite and the actuality of organizing it. For me, it's just when you look at tech faculties like arts and sciences, I just don't think it's enough time. I don't like the plebiscite. I just think that it's not, for especially larger faculties, it's not an effective way of being of educating every single person. I think you're better off doing something a little bit more flexibility. I don't know. I like plebiscites, but not in this specific context.
Vice President Kinda.
Yeah, definitely take your concerns, but my question to you would be, what do you propose? Because we went through our options. This is the one that seemed like the most reliable, most stable one. For instance, we can have a requirement saying, X percentage of your faculty has to vote. You know, that number is still arbitrary, right? How do you pick that number? Or, you have to hold a survey. With SurveyMonkey, I don't know, what do you do with it? Or you have a town hall. What if 20 out of 500 people in your faculty show up? So anything we do that says arbitrary. But with a plebiscite, it forces, a plebiscite inherently forces the FA to go and talk to its students. Because if an FA, for instance, wants a certain decision, it's their interest to go and talk to their students, right? They'll talk to their students, they'll consult their students, and all students will have the opportunity to vote, right? And it's easy to see who's voting, it's easy to see who's involved. And so this process seems like it's the most clear and accountable one. Mm-hmm. And I think this is why Kat picked it, but I'm definitely open to other suggestions.
Yeah.
Just responding to that, let's say we do it the way that we left it right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a meeting, they come to us, and then afterwards we have a secondary meeting. And we're basically looking on a case-by-case basis on whether they should have a plebiscite or not. I mean, I like what Marina said, and in a situation like that, I would probably vote on most occasions not to have a plebiscite for the reason that she just stated. So you have more flexibility on how you actually decide on a situation like that.
Can I just jump in there?
Yeah.
I think that we're on the same page in the sense that we're not plebiscites are terrible. They're a bad situation for everything. I think there are situations where it's applicable. But I would just like to see this have some more flexibility in case a situation arises that a plebiscite isn't the best solution.
I feel like both of you fail to see that a plebiscite is showing the engagement of students and they bring it to council and council has the last say, right? So we're using the plebiscite to say, wow, you're able to engage this many students, you got this much reaction from them. But if we decide this isn't enough, we can say, no, that isn't good enough.
But it also covers the faculty association but so that's one part we didn't say. So let's say it's a plebiscite. So the SU doesn't have to follow this. So if the, let's say, 55-60% of law students want a tuition increase, and the SU still says no, and then the LSA writes a letter, they're more accountable. The other thing it does, the additional thing it does, is if only time that this will be an issue is if the faculty association and the faculty leadership are working in tandem together and that they have good, positive relationships. So that, the secondary effect it has, it likely will bring the dean into this meeting and the dean into these meetings. Because if they want to work partners, it makes it in the best interest to have the administration of the faculty in there as well. So it actually increases the consultation. The other thing is, I wasn't really been listening to Councillor Bannister completely. I was in a conversation with President Allen. My understanding is that the issue was with large faculty associations. Based on my understanding, and based on the long-term plan, at least for the next 5 to 7 years, is they're not really targeting the provincial government or large faculty, like Senator Sarkis, that they're likely not ever going to get tuition increase. This is strictly the strategy seems to be for the provincial government and the administration knows this. That outside of lab fees and science in a couple of years, but the big market modifiers will likely target are generally going to target those small. Professional faculty associations such as business, law, med. So
we're going to move on. Because this topic has gone on for a little bit. So, Councillor Jaddick, you have next.
I would like to speak in favor of this motion. I think it's a great way to engage students, and we'll be able to give council an accurate representation of what the group that has gone out and held the plebiscite, what they have done. And I would also like to take this opportunity to remind everyone on council that you're all welcome to come to CAC meetings to talk about this. So feel free to come to our meeting.
Wonderful. Vice President Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have no idea what I was going to say. It was a while ago. I was thinking about that.
Great. With that, that wraps up our 15 minutes. So, if you'd like to extend, I currently have four people.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say.
Okay.
Really quickly, it's a clarification. So, yeah, this is indeed not bylaws. This is a motion made by council that will carry the full weight of any motion council makes, such as approving our budget, appointing people to committees, passing bylaws. So it carries the full weight of council behind, of the student union behind it, and is enforceable just like bylaw. But it will, it is not bylaw, it will expire at the end of this year. Likely, in tandem with this conversation, is to have a discussion of bylaw about how now to look at 8100 potentially. I think that conversation is probably better had once some of the stuff has resolved and it's all played out, as well as the reason this conversation doesn't happen as a bylaw change is to have something done sooner to match deadlines that are coming up, as opposed to changing bylaw generally takes about a month. Like, you have to go to council meetings, there's stuff in between, it takes some time. This is something we can do in a single meeting.
Okay, so like I said, you have four people on your speakers list. If you're curious, last time we moved through about 10 in 15 minutes, which is pretty average. You can extend again if you'd like to, or another option, you can postpone this. The other option is...
Call the question.
Hold on. Another option is we can actually move into a more formal debate. Some people can make their amendments because some people seem like they want to amend the motion. And then we can go from there. I'll take any points of parliamentary inquiry.
You answered it.
Okay. So before I take your call to question, Governor Hanseret, is anyone interested in moving into a more formal debate and talking about amending this? Because we had like an informal discussion regarding this. It sounds like some people wanted to try out a few amendments. You can consider those, or you can go with Governor Hanser and say postpone this to the next meeting of Students Council.
Whoa, I'm not saying postpone.
Well, I'm just saying it was an option brought forward that until you receive the legal opinion, you might not want to move on this particular question. It's really up to council as to how you want to proceed with this. So, do you want to move into a formal debate setting? Have you had enough discussion on this that we can move into a formal debate? I'm seeing lots of thumbs up, but not really any thumbs down. Any questions? Any points of...
I have a point of
that. Yeah.
Some members of council have expressed to me that they would like this to go to bylaw. So I'm wondering, if this went to bylaw, can we... This is essentially first principle. Can we, like, avoid doing first principle again at bylaw regarding this, and then just go directly to second?
I think the intent, as far as I've heard from the people who proposed it, is not to write this into bylaw. Okay. It's basically just to move something that will be in full effect until the end of this particular session of Students Council, so till the end of this year. Then next year, it can be reapproved, or later on in this year, it can be moved into bylaw. So I think the intended, correct me if I'm wrong, Vice President Kinda, Vice President Ordzik, is not to write this into bylaw 8100, but rather to just make a motion and have it in effect until the end of the year. I'm sure you could take this to bylaw and figure out whether or not it conflicts with bylaw 8100 or any other existing bylaws that we have in and go from there. But I would consider this as a Students' Council motion, and if you wanted to refer to Bylaw Committee and move it to Bylaw, then Council is more than welcome to do so. Okay? But I saw lots of interest in having a more formal debate on this. So we'll move into debate. I don't know if the people who are on my speakers list, I have Governor Hanser, Vice President Diaz, Councillor Zhang, and Councillor Khan. I don't know if you want to be placed on a formal debate speakers list or if you just want to pass your turns. But what I'll do is I'll set that up as the initial speakers list. So does that make sense? Is anyone confused? Is anyone lost? Is everyone awake? Everyone stand up and take a big stretch. That includes you too, Councillor Sleeman. Take a big stretch. Yay. Okay, your stretch is over. Okay, so we'll move into a formal discussion, starting with Governor Hanser.
Oh, snap. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak in favor of this. Well, for many of the reasons I suggested, the other, I've already stated, the other benefit that this motion has is actually oftentimes, I have to be careful with my words, but there's often an element of pressure from deans to faculty associations in what they can do and what they want to do. Significant pressure to do things, and then oftentimes, depending on the leadership of the FA, it's easy to fall, to get coaxed into what the dean wants. I'm not saying that's what happened with the LSA. But I'm not saying, but yeah, so and what this does, it actually provides a protective mechanism for those students of that faculty and the faculty associated. So when they go and meet, and the dean says, listen, we need to get this done now. We need to get this done because we have this time limit and we can't wait. This has to be done by this deadline. Well, the faculty association can then say, listen, even if we're in favor of this, we have to do this minimum consultation. And I'm not saying that's what happened with the LSA, but I think there was an element of a little bit of pressure from the faculty association to the faculty association, hey, we need to get this done. And I don't have any inside information, but based as an outside observer, it seems that seems to have played a part in the LSA writing this letter, so it just protects counsel, it protects the students of the faculty, and it protects the faculty association leaders.
Thank you very much, Governor Hanser. Vice President Diaz, I have you next on my speakers list.
Pass.
Councillor Zhang.
Pass.
Councillor Khan.
I guess it's just a general question to everyone, just to make sure I'm clear about this. This is not being written into the bylaw. This is just essentially just temporarily there for the year, and then we okay.
Councillor Bannister.
I'd like to make an amendment if I can. Is this the appropriate time?
Yes, this is a perfect time to make an amendment.
I'm like not prime time with the wording of these things, so I welcome help from other councillors. I would feel more comfortable if it said something along the lines of conduct a plebiscite or other manner of consultation that student council deems appropriate, just because, like I said before, if we do, hopefully we won't, we probably won't, but if we do come into a situation later this year that requires something to do with this, but plebiscite isn't the most effective way to do it, I would like to see this just as like a catch-all to make sure we do have some element of flexibility if another situation arises. And like I said, please help me with the wording.
Anyone have input on the wording?
Yeah.
Does this look okay?
It should be a comma before and after.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think it should also say something along the lines, at a general meeting prior to presenting, present the results of the plebiscite or blah, blah, blah to council, but not, or alternative methods to council. Exactly.
Is there any suggestion what would this alternative message be?
What was that saying?
Like, what would this other message be?
I think that we can decide that on a case-by-case basis.
Would we have it?
Point of order.
Okay.
Yes.
Can that happen right now?
What do you mean?
Talking between counselors.
That's a great point, Counselor Rookie. It cannot. So I'm assuming that this is the amendment you want
to
make.
And can I also make an amendment to strike the step in two just while we're doing this?
I'll just include that as part of your general amendment.
Okay.
Yes, and I'm going to unhighlight this. Is there a seconder for this amendment? Councillor Farouk? All right. Councillor Bannister, would you like to introduce your motion?
I don't really want to waste people's time. I think people understand why I'm doing this. Just, I think it's a good idea to make sure we have flexibility in the future. I don't think this takes a lot away from it. I think it just adds and gives us more security. So.
All right. Just give me 1 second. I'm getting the best names. Okay. Councillor Grilke.
I would like to speak against this. Can you put the amendment? Thank you. I'd like to speak against this amendment. I think that they already have to bring the plebiscite to us. So for the another method that student council deems appropriate, does that mean they have to come to us, get approval for their form of survey, and then bring it back to us? It's just, I feel like that extends the period than just having the plebiscite. Like, I mean, how many times are we going to make them come to us to get approval for things that they need to get approval for, to get approval to go against my
All right. Thank you very much for side comments. Councillor Grilke, please continue.
If we're going to make them do something, it's be uniform. So say they need a plebiscite, that's yes, against the motion.
Wonderful. Please refrain from making comments about student union entities. Mr. Santomana.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just as someone who isn't normally on council, from kind of an outsider's perspective, I'm completely against this just because of the wording. It's not clear what is appropriate unless you have an exact list of what is appropriate, which I think extends it. And we're saying that this is so the options are available in case an issue comes up. I think the entire point of this resolution, or whatever you want to call it, is so that another issue doesn't come up. Because the whole issue is that there wasn't a plebiscite, so this mandate is to say you need to have a plebiscite just so we don't have another issue. So instead of putting something in case another issue shows up, which kind of negates the point of this, so I think it might be a good idea to be clear what exactly qualifies under the plebiscite, how many students, a percentage of how many of the students have to respond to it, but throwing in another method, it's unclear, and kind of negates the entire problem.
Councillor Dueck.
I would also like to speak against this amendment. Well, back up to you. And honestly, the reason for that is, like, I agree with some of the other councillors' opinions in regards to the point of this was to expedite the process. The point of the plebiscite as well was to make this as efficient as possible. And I think that the multiple steps to council to get approval and to move for approval as to whether or not this is a proper consultation process, we're just going to see the same issue that we saw beforehand, where we weren't able to answer quickly, I guess. So we'll see, like, more issues regarding just not following our bylaws, if that's something we're concerned about.
Wonderful. All right, before we continue on with more discussion or more debate, if you are going to say something along the lines of, I agree with what this person said, and that's all you're going to say, just pass. Okay? Because it's now almost 9:15. I'm sure some people would like to go home. Let's make this a little bit more efficient.
Can you amend this question?
Yes. Vice President Diaz, it's called to question. Is there a seconder to call to question? Councillor Grilke, is there any opposition to calling to question? Councillor Bannister, okay. So with call to question is not amendable, not debatable, and it requires a two-thirds majority. All those in favor of calling to question, please raise your placards.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So we're going to call to question. So basically, you're voting. You're not voting on the amendment, okay? Let's be clear. You're not voting on the amendment. You're voting on whether you should vote right now on the amendment. Does that make sense? So all those in favor of calling to question, please raise your placards. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Awesome. So we'll now vote on this amendment. All those in favor of the amendment as proposed under here, please raise your placards. All those opposed? Amendment fails. Skull efficiency, people. Only one person voted in favor of this amendment.
So we were voting on an amendment.
Yes.
Can we do that again?
Okay, hold on. So because people in council apparently don't want to pay attention today, we will re-vote on this. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your placards. Wow, vote change went up by 2. 3, wow. All those opposed, it doesn't change. I suggest that all of you start paying attention.
Can we still remove the second?
Okay, so...
No, you can't.
I can't do this, but a couple of friendly amendments, amendments that I would propose that potentially would be friendly, would be to remove this 2, move this slash, and put students' council in front of it so it's very clear what council it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Vice President Kinda, seconded by Councilor Grilke. Is there anyone opposed to this amendment? I can put it in red if you guys really want.
No, no, let's do it.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Awesome. Let's continue on with our speakers list. I have no one on the speakers list right now.
Call to question?
Call to question, yes.
Governor Hanser, call to question. Is there a seconder for calling to question? Yes. Councillor Sleeman, is there anyone opposed to calling to question? No. Councillor Farouk, so we'll vote on calling to question. All those in favor of calling to question, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. Don't just go like this.
Friendly amendment, right?
No, the amendment was friendly.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Yes, no one opposed the amendment. All those in favor of calling to question, raise your placards. Or your hands or whatever.
It's everybody, man. It's 2/3. Let's go.
All those opposed? Pay attention. Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Wonderful. We'll vote on the motion. Kinda Orzik move that. Students' Council. Etc., etc., etc. All those in favor of this motion, please raise your placards. All those in favor of this motion, please raise your placards. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted?
Abstention.
Governor Hansra, Councillor Chen, anyone else? Mr. Santamak for Councillor Champagne. This motion carries. Yay. We'll move on, because we're not done yet.
I would like to pull out the last item.
You'd like to pull out, okay.
The one I moved.
All right.
Appropriate.
Thank you. I thought I'd get a few laughs from council. It'll lighten the mood a little bit. All right, so item 7E has been withdrawn. That brings our agenda to a close. Please maintain a little bit of silence as we do attendance, because I've had complaints in the past. President Lau. He's here. Vice President Orzik. She's also here. Vice President Kinda. Vice President Hodgson.
Yeah.
Vice President Diaz.
Yeah.
Governor Hansera.
Yeah.
Councilor Allard. Councilor Chen. Councilor Bannister. Councilor Dueck.
Here.
Councilor Sleeman.
Present.
Councilor Zhang.
Here.
Councilor Jaddick.
Here.
Councilor Grilke.
Yeah.
Alright, hey! Calm down! Councillor Bryce?
Good job.
Councillor Babatunde? Councillor Horvat? Councillor Fidowski? Councillor Jacobson?
Here.
Councillor Wong?
Yeah.
Councillor Gard, Councillor Gore, Councillor Cod is here. Councillor Cruzzi, hey! Councillor Morris, Councillor Bhatia, Councillor Hooper, Mr. Sanchama for Councillor Champagne, Councillor Binchik, Councillor Zinedine, Councillor Kwan, Councillor Huang, Councillor Peru, Councillor Hudson, and I'm here. We'll join this meeting at 9:19 p.m.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.